stuff, my stuff is out.
It's like quarter numbers or what?
Yeah.
I didn't figure it out until after I felt bad.
They didn't know something must be.
I'm sure you're seeing this.
That's all right. It's in the government. It's okay.
Hope I figured all that out.
No, that's got something.
Hey, and we do have it now. It's been a fun work group.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. A lot of.
Okay.
When it is.
Okay, if we can begin. Members, we're going to obviously work today on the supplemental finance bill, Senate File 2785, and I'll begin to present the bill in a minute. Just a couple of preliminary things. Want to just indicate, just make sure members understand what's in front of them. You've got an agenda of the order that will take the articles, and Senator Newman, you asked about that yesterday. And we sent out an email. We talked to Mr. Bodner and Mr. Nauman about what would work best. And it's basically simplest to most complicated, which will give staff the best opportunity to put things together as we proceed. Because if we finish a simple article, then they can start assembling it for the engrossed bill. You've got an appropriation tracking sheet, and I'll have a chance to explain that in more detail in a minute. You then have the articles of for each division with a summary, a spreadsheet, and the article itself, and that's arranged in order. It's my understanding that the economic development summary is not quite ready, so we'll get that, although that's a little bit further down. The other thing I'll mention, and we'll have some discussion about this, Senator Dibble, I think, is meeting with Senator Bach, and he'll be down hopefully within a short period of time. I think he's meeting about the bill on the floor today. But we're going to add a bill of his, Senate File 2859, to the agenda. And the way I'd like to proceed today is, and before I actually get into the bill, just procedurally, there have been some significant changes in the last 24 to 48 hours. And I'll just tell members of the minority, the division chairman didn't know about this until less than 24 hours ago. And I'll explain this in more detail when I get into the summary. But I'm going to suggest that we work our way through the articles this morning, and this will take some time. And the hope was, again, in talking to staff, that the easiest thing to do is to go through an article, take amendments, finish the article. Let me make it very clear. The totality of the bill is in front of us, and so if members have amendments that have not that occur to them subsequent during the day, we're going to come back because we're going to make some changes. I think it's only fair and actually to members, both minority and majority, to have a chance to review the totality of the bill. So even if hypothetically, we finish going through all the articles by the end of the morning, we're still going to come back because I want people to have the chance to absorb what's there, to have, obviously, Senate Counsel and Research has spent a lot of time with this thing. They know what's in there. But to make sure both majority and minority caucus staffs have been able to absorb changes made. And so I don't want to rush this thing through simply because we finished going through the bill, nobody has any questions or amendments. We will come back, so there's a chance to fully absorb some of the stuff I'm going to relay to everybody in a couple of minutes. The other thing is that these supplemental finance bills are always a little bit complicated. This one, I think, a little bit more so than any of the others I've worked on, either as chairman or as a member of the Finance Committee and a division chair. And again, I'll explain this in a minute. But we're going to have potentially some amendments offered either by the division chairs or myself to the articles to incorporate some changes that that we've discussed. That's not going to be true of every division. It's going to be true of some of the divisions. The easiest way to do that, we decided last night, Mr. Bodner, Mr. Nauman, and myself, was to have counsel for the division talked to the chairman. So this is after everybody had left the building. To have counsel for the divisions talk to the chairs about how they would like that amendment to read or not offer an amendment. But the best time to prepare that would be to do so during session. So I want to make sure that everybody understands we're not just going to dash through this thing, that I want. I will absolutely lay this bill over at the end of the morning session and come back. And I know Senator Fischbach is as the lead. Maybe you can just, you don't have to let me know what you would anticipate, but if you think you need more time, we'll give you more time.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is certainly a surprise. I guess we were not made, or at least I was not made as the lead, aware that there were going to be significant changes in the last 24 hours, I guess is what you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, and I'll explain that if you'll allow me.
But, Mr. Chair, I will say as soon as we have some idea of what's in the bill, I will certainly let you know what.
Well, and Senator Fischbach, that's exactly why I have no intention of finishing the bill this morning. Like I said, the division chairs weren't aware of this until less than 24 hours. So this is not something that's been percolating for quite a while. So I'm going to go ahead and present the bill. I do want to – this is – you're not going to be able to see this. I don't know if this would be a light note or not to start out. But the Historical Society sent this over to Vic Thorstenson from our staff. And I'll keep it up here. But I just have to show this. This is your predecessors. This is the 1907 Senate Finance Committee. And not everybody can see it, but Senator Fischbach, there's nobody who looks like you on this thing. Because there
Mr.
are...
Mr. Chair, thank God for that.
There are no women whatsoever. They're meeting, apparently... They're meeting in room 232, which I think is the Secretary of the Senate's office or something like that. The chairman, my predecessor, is Senator Frank Peterson, whoever that was. And there's one fellow, when you get a chance to look at the picture, who's got this mustache. He apparently was the Senate Finance Committee participant in the extreme sports of 1907. there appears to be only one staffer. Somebody looks to be 15. That's either a clerk or a very precocious member of Senate Counsel and Research, and I'm not sure, but when members get a chance to look at this, you'll see what the picture of us will look like in 107 years.
Let's do a picture.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the history lesson, because I can always count on one from the chair.
Well, it's not a history lesson, because we have no idea who these people are, what they did, or...
the footnote, or whatever it may be, Mr. Chair, but I do have a question about the timing. My understanding, Mr. Chair, is that you want to handle this bill on the floor on Monday?
I'm not sure.
And Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering if there is what the need is to speed this through, given that there have been changes in the last 24 hours. And I appreciate the fact that you said we're not going to finish this morning, but I believe it is your intent to, it sounds like, finish today sometime, even if it's in the evening.
Or tomorrow.
Given that we just have been made aware, literally just been made aware of these significant changes, Mr. Chair, I am wondering if the need to push this speedily through is still necessary.
Well, the deadline, third deadline's tomorrow. So that's what we're operating under. As far as hearing the bill on the floor, Senator Hand can certainly talk to Senator Bach. I don't know that Monday is absolutely the day. And if you'll give me a chance, I'm going to have Senator Champion chair the committee, and if you'll give me a chance, let me explain the nature of these changes, what's happened. The changes are not complicated, and I think they'll be understandable, but I want to make sure people understand what's happened the last couple of days. So, again, if you can just be patient, and I'll explain this more further. So I'll send our champion to chair. And
good morning. In keeping with tradition, I thought it would be interesting to say that when our great chair put up the picture, I realized there would be no one that looks like me on that picture either. And especially in 1907, I understand that the first African-American person who was elected to the Senate did not happen until 1972. And, in fact, he started serving in 1973. His name was Dr. Robert Lewis. In fact, in fact, in 1983, the University of Minnesota decided to name a building after him because he was a veterinarian, and he was elected from the great city of St. Louis Park. And so I just thought, keeping with that tradition, I heard you say it, so I thought I would just drop a little bit of history in there as well.
And Mr. Chair, we appreciate it. I learned something today.
That's right. Well, thank you. I'm so glad that I could add to the flavorful conversation. With that being said, Senator Cohen is with us, and he's going to take us through this great Senate file, which is Senate File 2785. Chair Cohen.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Let me just offer a couple of introductory comments relative to this. The supplemental finance bill this year is a little bit different than what we've had to do in the past, where obviously the economy has to a very good extent turned around. State finances are in better shape. 4 years ago, when I presented the last supplemental finance bill, my thought on the floor was this is becoming very tiresome as I presented the bill, because we had had years of deficits. I was actually, I won't say pleased, that's maybe a little bit unfair, but when Senator Roebling did such a very good job of chairing this committee, I was glad I was not in her position given the magnitude of the last deficit. So this bill on one hand has been easier, on the other hand raises pressures just because of expectations. Each chair is going to have the chance to explain his or her article, the spreadsheet, what they've tried to do. I want to just offer kind of an overall flavor, and if chairs don't mind, I'm going to pick out a couple, two or three of them. I'm not going to go through it article by article. But it's a combination of attempting to take some of the surplus money and spend it in ways that are relatively reasonable, and I think provide some progress for the state in some selected areas. It's also coupled with being a bill that, in effect, is partially a deficiency appropriations bill with appropriations that needed to be that have to be made. So just to give members kind of an overall flavor, when we get a chance to listen to Senator Wigger, we'll find that a centerpiece of his bill is an emphasis on early education, early childhood, ECFE, learning readiness. And I think folks of both parties understand the importance of early childhood and the fact that we should have done this 30 years ago, but that his bill will reflect the effort on this legislature, which has been on a bipartisan basis, to take a look at what happens in terms of early childhood. There are also some provisions spread throughout this bill in a couple of different divisions relative to something that I just happen to think is just a disgrace, not only within this state but throughout the country, and that's the achievement gap and some efforts to try to start addressing that. We have, to show you kind of the contrast, in Senator Bonhoeff's bill, we deal with the deficiency of the Minscu budget relative to their contracts, yet there's also something that Senator Bonhoeff has worked on, Senator Sieben, myself, that's pretty exciting, and that's the request from the University of Minnesota and Mayo to provide some state support for the regenerative medicine program. Just to offer a flavor, when Dr. Andre Tirzak was in my office, and I've talked to him a couple times subsequent to that, he made a comment that was very striking, which was that as doctors, we do a very good job of treating symptoms, but we do a very poor job of actually curing people. And he talked at some length with myself about what they are doing at Mayo. And so that's a place where I think all of us felt that this is something that we need to participate in. Senator Lori has a number of pieces of his bill, and again, he'll talk about it in some detail, but we recognize that we've tried to help out the people who take care of the most vulnerable in our society. So something that's been of some, I will suggest, bipartisan support as best I can tell, the attempt to deal with the residential care facility workers, which we did not do last year. So I could go through this. Senator Thomasoni, who's not here, what more can you say about his article? It gives everybody pause, and we'll have a chance to listen to Senator Tomassoni. But I want to have each of the chairs present their articles in detail. Now, let me tell you what's happened in the last couple of days, and then I'm going to go through the spreadsheet. When you put together a bill like this, and you get, and this is the way it's always worked in the years I've been here, and I can't speak for what took place, what's taken place over the decades, but as best I know, when we start annual sessions, this is the way things have been handled. You know, we'll get the articles from division chairs. Now, I don't want to get into a long history. In the old days, you had four divisions, plus K-12. Now, obviously, we have more divisions and so more chairs. But we have each person presenting their article within the supplemental finance process. Senator Stumpf can also make a reference to some of the history in this place. And there are always going to be some nickel-dime changes made within the appropriations. And I'll go through this, but I'll give you just one flavor of a small change. In Senator Tomassoni's division, I think Senator Brown was the author of the request to provide some small money to the Mille Lacs community relative to what's going on with the walleye fishing, and to have monies provided for the combination of the band, Mille Lacs band, and the greater Mille Lacs community. In Senator Tomassoni's division, the money was taken out of the tourism budget, and the folks at tourism weren't crazy about that. It was the ability simply to transfer that to just a general fund appropriation. So that's an example of a smaller nickel-dime kind of difference that always happens. Here is the major thing that's taken place, and on one hand I defend it, on the other hand I'm not crazy about it. I was not told, but maybe informed, late Monday, Senator Bach and Speaker Thiessen had reached an agreement to keep at the bottom line, going into the 16-17 biennium, $750 million. And keep in mind, the forecast from March showed a budgetary balance of $2.6 billion. And so why should that be a problem to keep $750? We should keep a lot more than that. There are, if members look at the budget, you'll find that the money is going to get eaten up fairly quickly. But I realized in being given that 750 figure, so you hope you go into the next biennium, no matter who's in charge, with some money available for whatever purposes. And 750 seemed like a very solid figure. When I got the figure, however, I realized this is not going to be easy, and it's going to require some changes in the appropriations. Basically, the conversion of ongoing base spending to one-time spending. And so I became aware of this end of the day Monday. I worked all day Tuesday with Mr. Nauman in trying to figure out how we could make this work, and then had a chance to talk to the chairs for the first time yesterday to get recommendations back from them as to how they would meet some of these new budget targets as a consequence of this decision. There are a couple of places where there's some significant displacement in terms of what had been proposed. I should also tell you that there are several bills moving on their own, but where we track the money through this process, obviously. A very notable example is the Minscu contract necessity, where that's now being treated as a one-time expenditure. I would expect there'll be a chance to have further conversations with the governor and the House relative to this as the bill proceeds, but to meet the $750 million figure, it's just simply too large of an appropriation. The other significant appropriation where there's a displacement, and this has not passed anything yet, this is within Senator Pappas's pension commission, is a pension proposal which now becomes a one-year proposal in the out years, not a two-year proposal in the out years. Now, that actually hasn't passed yet, but we're tracking the money. There's some the other changes are basically, and I'll go through the spreadsheet, the other changes are basically converting a lot of the grant programs to one-time grants and not base-level funding grants. And again, as we go through this, you'll see more of the detail. Now, the other thing I need to tell everybody on this committee and everybody in this room because I've had all sorts of people, some of this has become known to a handful of people, and certainly to the chairs. I've had people say, well, I hear the House is doing such and such and such and such, and why can't we do it this way? How can the House do it? And the answer is very simple. The House isn't abiding by the agreement, and we don't have an exact figure. We will show a budgetary balance that's actually a little bit beyond the $750 million in the spreadsheet. I don't have an exact figure for the House. You know, I think they've passed their bill out of Ways and Means, but I don't have the exact number. But the number we have is that they're having a balance of about $600 million. So despite what I'm told is a signed agreement between Senator Bach and Speaker Thiessen, they couldn't abide by that agreement. And I want everybody in this room, whether member or otherwise, to understand that when you see these numbers and see these numbers in a way that is to be distinguished from House numbers, that's how they did it. They are keeping at the bottom line only $600 million, give or take. We are keeping at the bottom line $750 million, which was the charge I was given by Senator Bach. So in terms of changes to the bill, I'm going to go through the spreadsheet, and I asked Mr. Nauman to kind of lay out the predicate for the spreadsheet, and I'll go through some of the distinctions that have been made, or the changes that have been made, so people have a sense of them, and then we'll have the chairs present their articles. And that's why as we go through this, Mr. Chairman, Senator Fischbach, getting back to our dialogue, I don't think you're going to find a lot of these matters hard to comprehend not see that there's some pattern to a lot of this. And I think it'll be easy to absorb. But, again, we're not going to rush through this.
Chair Cohen, I just want to make sure that everyone has a copy of the spreadsheets, and you should have it in your packet, so we want to make sure you have that so we can go through it expeditiously as possible.
And Mr. Chairman, you've got two sheets. You've got the overall summary, and then you've got the detailed spreadsheet. And so, Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to do is to ask I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, if I can make another preliminary comment. When we get to Senator Dibble's bill, he has cash. There's been talk about cash in lieu of bonding. And the decision made was to have his division make recommendations to Senator Stumpf and Senator Stumpf's committee. And so what I think Senator Dibble will do is, I'm not sure where in the process, but he'll have an amendment to pull that. That won't be carried in this bill. And so that's why I said we're going to add another bill to the agenda, which is a vehicle bill for Senator Dibble that we can convey to Senator Stumpf.
All right. Thank you so much.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, I'd just like to ask, I understand you're going to be going through this spreadsheet. It's dated 4-3 at 12:46. And this reflects the significant changes that have taken place in the last 24 hours. Do the articles that we have in front of us, these are dated 3/31, so I am assuming they do not. So we will be working from old articles. Or I guess I'm wondering how you're going to, Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, make this, make it understandable.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fischbach, that's exactly why I don't intend to pass the bill this morning. Because when the chairs present their articles, they'll have an amendment to conform their article to the spreadsheet changes. And we'll work on this during the course of the day. And that's why we'll have a general presentation by the chairs, open for amendments that members might have, and then we'll lay the bill over during the time we're in session so that they can, because again, some of this is changed over this last 24 hours, so they can have an amendment to reflect changes made. And then what I'd like to do is the way I've normally done it over the years, where I would move to adopt the spreadsheet at the end along with the bill itself.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen. Will the amendments that will be made to the articles I'm assuming in some cases potentially delete alls. I don't know, but it, will those amendments be available to us so that we're able to write do if we do have amendments to write them properly to what we have in front of us? I guess I'm wondering if we would be have those available, Mr. Chair.
Senator Cohen.
Chairman, Mr. Bowden could maybe answer that better, but I believe that counsel is going to be available to everybody to try to help write amendments as we proceed. And again, the expectation is, I have not been involved heavily with Senator Dibble's bill today. I don't know how long we'll be in session, but the assumption is we'll be there for a while, and the chance to spend some time working on this during the course of floor debate. Mr. Bowden, I do want to offer a comment.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Fischbach, I think what you'll see is a spreadsheet that shows proposed changes to the spending the way it emerged from division recommendations. My understanding from talking with Senator Cohen was those changes will not be placed before the Finance Committee until a later time for action. They're available for review. Any amendments that are drafted to any of the language can take that into understanding. I think we can work around any confusion that way in terms of any, certainly for changes to policy or any language, I don't think there'll be any confusion with that. And staff can explain what the consequences of the proposed changes would be for any amendments.
Senator Fischbach, I understand your concern. Could I suggest that we give the chair an opportunity, or Senator Cohen an opportunity to go through that? The spreadsheet, and then we can see how things progress and if there is any additional concern based on tracking things or making sure that any proposed amendments can be done in an appropriate fashion that we can revisit it at that particular time.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate
you. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that you are trying to provide us with information. I'm concerned, though, Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, that when we break for session, that the minority does have the information available to them, so that this is you claim that this is our opportunity to look at the bill and look at the significant changes that will be made, and so I want to make sure that we have the information that we need in order to understand and react to the proposed legislation. So, and I guess I understand that we're going through the spreadsheet, but Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, is your intent to have every one of these articles explained prior to session this morning? So that Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, we have some idea of what's going on?
Senator Cohen.
Chairman, Senator Fischbach, I can't speak to that. Depends on how committee discussion goes. My intent is not to rush this. Keep in mind that tomorrow we have a relatively, I believe, short floor session and the rest of the day available to us. And, you know, in terms of the process, this kind of process, I think I'm gonna try to provide more opportunity for debate and discussion on this than I've ever seen in years past, including, you know, when I was chairman previously and under previous finance chairman that I've served with. So we'll have plenty of time. I will encourage the chairman to maybe talk, all the chairman can listen to this, to talk to your minority counterparts during session. It's going to be a little bit tougher for Senator Dibble to do that, but to talk to the minority counterparts about what changes might be made so that if counsel has not had a chance to prepare the exact language, you know what's going to be there. And I don't think you're not going to find – let me make it clear. The biggest issue is what we're doing with the tails. The rest of it is not significant changes, and the rest of it is not anything out of the normal process of putting together a finance bill. It's the tails that are the significant change.
And Senator Fischbach, if I might add that I believe Senator Cohen said earlier that we were going to make sure that even if we go through the articles and that we would pause and make sure that all folks around the table really have an opportunity to digest it even before any further action would be done, in order to make sure that everyone's given that latitude and the room to make sure that they've had a chance to think about it and debate the issue or bring any additional amendments that they believe to be appropriate. So with that being said, Senator Cornyn, if you would be so kind as to walk us through, or whoever's going to walk us through this spreadsheet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to ask Mr. Nauman to lay out kind of the very broad strokes, and I'll take you through the details.
Welcome, Mr. Nauman, and if you identify yourself for the record, and then we can proceed forward.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd be pleased to. Eric Nauman with the Office of Senate Counsel Research and Fiscal Analysis. I think my purpose here is to maybe provide an orientation to the spreadsheet. It's a somewhat unconventional spreadsheet. It's a broad overview spreadsheet as well as articulating some detail. So the very first two pages are organized as summary document. Yes. Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm working off of the landscape document titled General Fund Budget, FY14-15 Supplemental, Comparison of Budget Division Recs and Authors Recommended Changes in the upper left-hand corner. The columns are oriented as DIV Rec. These are summary level by budget division of what each budget division recommended. The Office of Senate Counsel posted these data online, I believe, 2 days ago. So these data should be quite familiar to you. Then the author has recommendation columns. And then on the far right-hand side, there are subtractions. And if, Mr. Chair and members, if you then flip a couple of pages in, you will begin seeing a whole series of line items, lines number 45 through 198. And I think probably as the chair works through these columns, it's helpful to look at the far right-hand yellow columns, because those will show you the change between by biennium. So they're not annual changes, but they're biennial changes between what the division originally recommended and what the author's proposed changes are. I think an inevitable question will be, how do these numbers roll up? Because in some cases, they're revenue changes, not very many, but there's a few. And in most cases, they're spending changes. So I'd like to at least orient you to the coding system. If you flip back to the very first page under the column allocation, you will see a code. So picking on Senator Wieger's division, E12-E, any number that is coded E12-E in the detail will roll up into that line item. I want to pause and make sure that that's understood.
Any questions of Mr. Nauman about the orientation to the analysis or how we will proceed with this supplemental spreadsheet?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nauman, you have E12E, then you have E12S and E12R.
Yeah.
Maybe you're going to explain that, but I just thought because you're talking.
Sure. And there's a coding system for each division, and there are codings within each division. If I can, so, Senator, there are no E12-S, but if there were shift allocations, that's how it would show up. The R would be revenues. I think a good example might be if you look at lines 24 through 28, this is the Transportation and Public Safety Division. So TPS-E line items in the detail will be money that reflects the target, the ongoing target for that budget division. TPS-1 reflects the one-time money that Senator Cohen spoke about earlier. TPS-ONR is the one-time revenue, essentially revenue changes that were booked against that one-time money. TPS-TR, of which there is none, would be tax revenue, and TPS-NTR would be non-tax revenue. Essentially, if you look at a line item in the detail as Senator Cohen walks through it, look over to the left, and this is, and that will be your guide as to where it rolls up. Of course, I will sit here, and if there are questions, I'll be happy to tell you how it rolls into division. It's essentially a way of orienting you, because this committee tends to think about things by budget division, of showing you what the totals would be, but also providing you some detailed walkthrough, because there are a number of changes here, primarily in the tails. So, Mr. Chairman, that's what I have. I'm happy to sit here and answer any orientation questions as well.
Any other questions of Mr. Nauman before Senator Cohen proceeds? Seeing no questions, Senator Cohen.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And let me make it clear. You have in front of you the details of each article. So what I'm going to highlight are the changes made to these spreadsheets. And I'm not going to go through the details within each article, but I hope people will keep in mind, just because we have a number of new members of the Finance Committee, this is the kind of process we use for a supplemental finance bill, where, at least the process I've used, where we try to make sure the chairs put together the article, but it's not inviolate in terms of we simply take everything dollar for dollar, just put them in the bill. It's a single bill, so the money is all fungible, and I try to always maintain the integrity of what the divisions have done. But again, it's always, like any finance bill, going to be a work in progress. So I'm going to go to page 2 of the spreadsheet. I'm going to only mention by line item, and I think I have a sense that most of these, Mr. Nauman is going to again correct mistakes I've made, but I think I have a pretty good sense of what we have here. So I will emphasize again, I'm going through the proposed changes for more of these bills passed out of division.
Chair, I just want to make sure that everyone has a ruler if they need one in order to follow along. And if you need one, just let us know. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks. So starting with line 46, there's a proposal in E12 on English learners. That's been changed from back to the 5 years. And so there's a subtraction relative to that, and that makes a significant change in terms of savings in the tails budget of $12 million. As I mentioned, there are some grant programs, lines 52 and 53. You have the Reading Corps grant program. That's turned into a one-time appropriation. The same is true of a proposal of mine of College Possible. That's been turned into a one-time appropriation. Additionally, it ended up being carried in both K-12 and higher ed, so it's transferred to the higher ed article and eliminated from this article. On line 56, there's a smaller conversion to tail of the certifications. There are, as I mentioned, Senator Wieger put a lot of effort into early childhood. So on lines 61, 62, and 64, there is a subtraction of some of those monies, a conversion on the tails with some of it. Additionally, as part of this, and I'm not sure which line it's on because I think it's on the next page, probably the most significant addition.
Line 74.
There is 74, teacher evaluation. With the QComp evaluation and some of the districts not being involved with that, there was an effort to provide some money that was also part of the change with some of the programs within K-12. So there's both a small tail issue and an addition relative to that. That's maybe the most significant addition that's not contained in the budget articles. There's also an addition for similar to the school lunch program of a pilot project of Senator Johnson's relative to providing for school breakfast. That is done as a small appropriation, but also done on a one-time pilot basis.
Mr. Chair.
The last principal provision.
Senator Cohen, we have a question. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, can I just ask, so on those, 73 through 74, the changes that are being made are not just in order to reflect the $750 million. You're adding money to some programs.
Senator Cohen.
And that's what I said. That's what I said a few minutes ago, Senator Fischbach. Is that,
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I was just trying to clarify it so that I understood it correctly. So I wanted to.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, Senator Fischbach, that's exactly what I said, that there were some small additions. I used that as an example. I used an example of a transfer, the Mille Lacs transfer, which was an addition. You'll find that there are some small additions. The teacher evaluation is probably the largest addition, I believe, that's in the bill. The others tend to be smaller additions. And, again, I'll go through those.
Senator Fischbach.
I just wanted to make sure I understood as I'm looking at the spreadsheet what exactly is going on.
Yeah.
So So, Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, we are redoing the division recommendations in some ways. Just
Senator Cohen.
For adding
Chairman,
and
Senator
subtracting,
Fishback, Mr. no more so than has been the case in this place for years.
Chair, Senator Cohen, I just want to be clear on what we're doing today.
Correct.
Senator Cohen.
That's why I'm going through this, Senator Fishback, and that's why we're going to be very careful in what we do. In some places, like I said, there are subtractions, some places additions. So let me go back to line 74, which is the probably most significant addition, and that's the teacher evaluation. And that's an issue that came up, at least presented to myself, at the start of the week as well. And the folks on K-12 can speak to that issue better than I can. Line 75 is something that Senator Stumpf has been wrestling with for quite a while this session and finally came to me for some help, and that's to provide some disaster relief relative to several school districts that have been heavily impacted. So there's both an addition to the bill, and then it reflects itself in a tail issue. Going down to line 79, now we're within
Mr.
higher
education. Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Cohen, then, is that a one-time expenditure, then, for that natural disaster?
Senator Cohen.
Chairman, Senator Anderson, that's correct. Then going down to the higher education division, that starts on line 77. This is probably the most significant piece of this bill that I'm not very happy about. But again, I explained the problem with the TAILS budget. You give me a budget target, a TAILS target of $600 million, and everybody would be applauding. But that's the minuscule operating increase, which is appropriated for this year, the biennium, but the TAILS are not. I think the reality is that this is something, and Senator Bonhoeff and I have talked about it, and I hope she's had a chance to convey it to Chancellor Rosenstein, who I did not have a chance to talk to, that this is something that I think will be an issue as we proceed. I had an opportunity to talk to Commissioner Pogemiller late yesterday about this, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn in his suggestion that he thinks the governor will have some concern with this. I have some concern with this. So it's an issue we can deal with in the conference committee process. Certainly, I think it would be highly unlikely and almost impossible to not continue this appropriation in the next biennium, whether in the base or not. Lines 81, 82, and 83 are new programs presented by Senator Bonhoeff. Those are being done now as one-time appropriations. And as I mentioned on line 83, there's a transfer of, I think both divisions ended up appropriating money for this program. This was a bill of mine. And this is a grant, so this is only being done as a one-time appropriation, not in the base. Health and Human Services.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry.
Hold on, Senator Cohen. Senator Fishbach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, I'd just like to go back to that Minsky operating increase. You said you had concerns, and I do too. Strong concerns about that, because my understanding is this is that money goes to a lot of it goes to salaries, and to not have, I mean, we're eliminating the TAILS. You're turning that into one time appropriation. That's my understanding correctly, Mr. Cohen.
Senator Cohen.
Chairman, that's correct.
So,
Senator Fishbach.
How are we expect Minsky to deal with this?
Senator Cohen.
Chairman, Senator Fishbach. The money will be appropriated to deal with that, and that means that the governor next year, whoever the governor might be, would have to make sure that appropriation is made out of the budgetary number, and that budget number would then, even if not in the base, because obviously, Mr. Chairman, Senator Fishbach, you know from being here over the years, even if something's in the base, you can get rid of it. There's nothing magic about the base. It's just a starting point. So that means that the money would not be reflected in the base but would be added to the budget. And I would be highly surprised if any governor were not to continue that. And if any governor were not to continue that, the legislature, and it's your comment is striking, because you're the minority lead on this committee, I'm the majority lead on the committee, that suggests that it would probably be pretty unanimous from, I guess I shouldn't extrapolate from the particular to the general, but given the fact that both you and I have concerns, I would assume that might be reflected by many other people within our caucuses. So I would be highly confident this would not be a fight we would have next year. And it's possible that the matter might be resolved this year. We're going to get into a much larger issue. Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I didn't offer my arithmetic relative to the tail issue. And I apologize, and I'm going to backtrack because I think it's important. Just do some simple arithmetic. We start with $2.6 billion. We subtract from that, that's the forecast, we subtract from that $1.1 billion for the tax bill. Now we're down to $1.5. Senator Lurie is going to speak in a little bit more detail about a very critical issue relative to the health care access fund, extremely critical issue that's come up in the last several months. Which necessitates, and the House and the Senate both agree on this, a $400 million, I'm not sure the exact number, but around $400 million tail appropriation. That takes us down to 1.1. Everybody thinks we need to provide the COLAs for the residential care facilities, and that's something that we do push aside. You know, we've forgotten the folks who are taking care of the most vulnerable. Last year we did the nursing homes. We have not done the residential care facilities. That's a major appropriation that's in Senator Lurie's article. I believe that has a tail of $160 million. So now you're down to $940 million surplus money. There are obviously other appropriations in this bill, including deficiency kinds of appropriations that we'll find, as an example, in Senator Latz's bill. So now you're down that much further. And next thing you know, you're pushing against that $750 very easily. And that's why when you do the arithmetic, you find yourself bumping up against that $750 almost immediately. And that necessitates, to be honest, in an expeditious way. Remember, I learned about this end of the day Monday. It's Thursday morning. And that necessitates some fairly, some changes that are not going to be entirely palatable. This is probably the major one that will go through.
And so I think, Senator Cornett, that's a great transition into Health and Human Services Division number.
And Mr. Chairman, this is where I'm at a little bit of a loss because I'd ask the chairs to make some of these changes. I know in the in the case of Senator Lurie, he did some of this, and I'm looking at a couple of them for the first time. In particular, there was an adjustment made to on line 115. And Senator Lurie, I'm going to ask for a little bit of help from you on a couple of these. Mm-hmm. The major change on 115 is this healthcare access fund, where we had hoped to take care of more of the problem. And Senator Lurie suggested that we could match what I believe is going to be the number from the House, which results in a tail savings of approximately $85 million. There's also the presumptive eligibility, which is treated as a subtraction of $7.7 million. Senator Lurie, do you mind if I ask for a little bit of help on 89 and 103? I think. It's the first time I've seen
which ones? Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair.
89 and 103.
89.
Lines 89 and 103.
Okay. Maybe Mr. Nauman can help me out a little bit with line 89. That is the home and community-based services performance improvement payment program, and this is eliminating an interaction with the 5% rate increase that had been carried previously. And then which other line?
And
Senator Cohen. Healthcare Access Fund.
103. I mentioned 103.
Okay. The 10% hospital
rate reduction. Okay, that was initially carried at an $8.4 million cost. We were going to end the 10% hospital rate cut as of October 1st of 2014, when we were required to switch to a new coding system, the ICD-10 coding system, and rebase because of federal law. But in the last couple of days, literally, I think yesterday, it became final that the feds did delay that requirement, and it allowed us a little bit of wiggle room. So we decided to delay by 1 month the implementation of the ICD-10 coding system, and also delay the effective date of ending the 10% rate cut by that same month, which produces a savings of that $796,000.
Okay.
Senator Cohen.
Thanks, Senator Lurie. Going to the next page, line 108, there is a change in the tails of part of the mental health grants. Some of that continues to be carried, but some of that has changed. I mentioned the very significant adjustment on line 115. 127, line 127 is an issue people have heard. This is something else that I've worked on. This fits into some of the achievement gap and early childhood issues I talked about a few minutes ago. This is a pilot project that's been presented to, I think, three committees. This is an addition to the bill, but it's also not carried in the tails. Line 129, we have the Environment Division.
Senator Fischbach?
Mr. Chair, you mentioned line 115, but I guess I'm wondering if possibly Senator Lurie could explain, or you mentioned it, but I guess I
didn't get it. Mr. Chairman, Senator
Fischbach. Senator Cohen?
Senator Fischbach, if I could ask for maybe a little bit of editorial discretion on my part. It's an issue that's pretty significant. And when we get into Senator Lurie's article, we're going to have a greater discussion about that. If you don't mind holding off until Senator Lurie presents his article. I'm pretty conversant with the issue, but I'd like to have him present that to us because he's a lot more conversant than I am, if that'd be okay.
Senator Fischbach?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, we will wait until he presents his article.
I promise you will hear about this. This is
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen.
Senator
sure we will.
This is almost a half
Senator
billion.
Cohen.
This is almost a half billion dollar issue. You'll hear about it. Line 129 is the Environment Division. There's a change with line 130. There was some money appropriated for the Olmstead court decision. I had a visit from the Lieutenant Governor, who's been very involved with this, along with a representative from the department, from Deed, who I might add is also the former committee administrator for this committee. And they gave me a copy of the court order and the court monitor's report, and it was clear that this is something that was probably underfunded. So there's some additional money appropriated, but not all of it's carried in the tails. Some of it's done then as one-time money because it's to implement the court order. I don't think we need to do that on an ongoing basis. As part of the adjustments made throughout this bill, there was an attempt to pay back the Permanent School Trust Fund in the course of budget cutting over the years in an effort to try to deal with the minerals management account. The division under past chairmanships had taken some money from the Permanent School Trust Fund, put it into DNR. The attempt in Senator Tomasoni's bill was to repay that in full. What this does is to repay it by 50%. There's also an adjustment on line 138, 139, and this is something of mine. Last year when we did the bill, there was some guarantees during the course of Senator Tomasoni's bill relative to the county fair allocation. And it was underfunded, at least based upon what had been there before. And a little bit of confusion between, to be honest, myself, Department of Agriculture, the county fair folks, I'd made the promise that we would reinstate some of that money if we had surplus monies to work with. and Senator Tomasoni had taken it out of the Agri account, and I didn't, because again, that was a mistake, something I had made a year ago, something I talked to Senator Tomasoni about, and so that's an addition, but again, done as a one-time addition, but transferring the money out of the Agri account to the general fund. There's also an appropriation on 141, and I think this was, again, a little bit as these things are being put together, I won't say a miscommunication between Senator Tomasoni and myself, but the committee will hear next week some legislation that I've worked on with Representative Pawlowski relative to disaster relief. And I don't want to get too far ahead of things, but members might recall that during the special session this past summer, the discussion was, why do we need the session? You know, we've got the money there. And it was clear you couldn't appropriate the money without a special session. So we've worked on some legislation that would allow us to take excess monies for disaster relief and simply have that converted administratively without the need for a special session to allow the money to get to the disaster areas that much more quickly. Part of that was Bowser had some money set aside for that purpose. I think Senator Tomasoni was simply not aware of the other legislation and took that account, and I asked him if we could reinstate that to Bowser relative to the disaster relief, and I believe he then took the required change.
Line 154.
In 154, where it's that return grant, that money is returned to Bowser. Going back up, and so now I'm on page, the next page. Line 150, I mentioned the Mille Lacs appropriation of Senator Brown. That's reflected in 151, but the reinstatement to the money to tourism is done in line 150. 156 is something else. There is an immense fight that took place between the City of St. Paul and the Department of Agriculture relative to food safety inspection. There was a lot of press about it. People might remember seeing some of the articles. The Department of Agriculture was just emphatic, and I talked to the commissioner, Commissioner Fredrickson, about some money. It's not quite what they were asking for, but not too far away to try to cover those food inspections. I need to point out, and Senator Fischbach, I apologize. I said that in terms of some of these changes, the biggest addition was the teacher evaluation. There are also two significant changes in terms of how we reach this new TAILS target. One is the health account, the healthcare access fund. We'll get into that in a few minutes. But I do need to point out line 157. 157, and this I don't necessarily make apologies for, but it's illustrative of why it was difficult to reach this target figure. During the 2010 budget cuts, members who were here might recall that there was a first budget bill. Numbers continued to go south. There was a second budget bill. During some of the discussions relative to the first bill, the then environment fiscal analyst for the House, this, to be honest, was a private conversation with Commissioner Tom Hansen, other members of Governor Plenty's administration. In fact, Commissioner Showalter was there. He was then, you know, the budget director, myself, Representative Carlson. And the analyst said, by the way, there's this landfill account that hasn't been used in years. And so we took a small portion of it. Well, by the end of the session, we took the whole thing. That account has been replenished. It's not being used. So I use it to get to the tails. And that's reflected in line 157. There's also, on line 158, a PERA appropriation, which now has been changed relative to the tails. I don't want to get too carried away with line 175. It's an issue that I've presented to a couple of committees and involves myself. This is a one-time appropriation, which is canceled if it's not used. And that's for the Turnaround Arts Program. So, Mr. Chairman, I feel compelled to offer a little bit of explanation. This is a program that I've worked with that has had spectacular results in terms of achievement gap issues. And I thought, as part of the achievement gap, maybe we could do it ourselves. The program comes from what's called the President's Committee on the Arts and Humanities. And some members are aware that President Obama appointed me to this committee in the fall of 2009. It's a committee advisory to the White House. It was established during the first year of President Reagan's term, and it was determined to be chaired by the First Lady, Mrs. Reagan. And that's continued over the years. So the current chair is Mrs. Obama. There are 35 of us from around the country. I just want to tell everybody here that the group is very heavy, New York, Washington, L.A. There are about 7 or 8 of us from other cities. I yell about geographic diversity, and I think I've had a little bit of an impact relative to that. The committee does a number of programs, but the spectacular program is this Turn On Arts program that integrates an arts curriculum with a school curriculum. And we function as kind of a board of directors. We don't appropriate money. But this committee has this program has some metrics that have been established with it. There's been a study done by University of Chicago and the consulting agency Booz Allen that shows significant increase in achievement scores, significant increase in attendance, significant decrease in discipline, and on an anecdotal basis, a huge increase that the principals have told us about on participation by the families and parents. And the committee selected, or the staff selected, 8 schools. They were the dysfunctional schools, I think it's the SIG schools from the Department of Education, took applications, narrowed it to 8 schools around the country, and the results have been spectacular. We've had a chance to visit the Savoy School in the Anacostia neighborhood in Washington. When we went to the school the first time a year ago in November, Rachel Goslins, our executive director, pointed out that half the parents, or half the fathers at that school were either in jail or prison. And the results in that school have been spectacular. The reason this appropriation is here is things changed a little bit. And Minnesota is actually a finalist for the next go-around. We won't know for a little bit as to whether or not Minnesota will be approved. But there's a joint venture that was put together by the State Arts Board and the Purpich School. And I think one of the appeals to the director and staff is that it will not just simply be urban schools, but will also include rural schools. And they have not really had an opportunity to do that. So this is an appropriation that's available only if needed, if Minnesota is selected. But again, we won't know that. The other thing, parenthetically, that I don't know that Minnesota gets the opportunity to utilize is the President and the First Lady wanted to appoint artists to this committee for the first time. So some of my fellow committee members have adopted schools. I was not selected as one of the artists to do so, but I think Sarah Jessica Parker's got the Portland School and Forrest Whitaker's got the Des Moines School and Yo-Yo Ma's doing the Boston School. I don't know if we get those folks here or not, but the program is a spectacular program, and I'm excited by the fact that Minnesota is a finalist for this next go-around. So, but it's a one-time expenditure, and again, it's available only until needed. Going to the transportation article, line 181 at the bottom of the page, some of the Greater Minnesota Transit money has been put in the tails. When I say put in the tails, some of that money has been turned into one-time money. Same is true on line 185 relative to the capital security program. Now, this is a little bit different. I want to make sure people understand. 187 says one-time spending recommendations of $135 million. That's what I mentioned to members in terms of Senator Dibble's one-time cash recommendations to be conveyed to Senator Stumpf's committee, and that's why you see that as a subtraction, because the intent all along was to convey the recommendations of the division to capital investment for final placement and determination in what Senator Stumpf is doing. So I don't want people to be confused by that.
And Senator Cohen, is that why we're adding Senate File 2859?
Yes. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. That's correct. And Senator Dibble will deal with that when he presents his article. And I don't serve on Senator Dibble's division. I think Senator Peterson, I think, is the minority lead. And I don't know what conversations have been taking place, but that was always our understanding at a leadership level as to how we would handle that. We then have the next three line items in transportation.
That is just the revenue portion that was in the one-time.
Oh, that's right. There was a revenue portion, the one-time money, so that becomes an addition to the budget. There's a very small addition to the youth intervention grants, and then at the bottom, 190, we track this, $3 million. This is the disaster relief bill I talked about earlier, and we put $3 million, I think the House is actually put more money into this initial account. So, Mr. Chairman, those are, I think, almost all the changes. I've asked Mr. Nauman to maybe mention mistakes I've made or things of importance that I haven't highlighted.
So, Mr. Chairman, members, I only have a few small edits, and I'll blaze through them quickly because I think you have more important things to do than listen to my clarifications. On line 64, the early learning scholarships, I'll just clarify that the changes there include a reduction in 14-15 and an increase in 16-17. There was an originally $12 million recommended for the scholarships in 15 and a tail of 8. The changes tend to bring a closer relationship between the 14-15 appropriation and the planning estimates for 16-17. And the next change that I would highlight is on line 74, the teacher evaluation. This is actually a $10 million entitlement, but it will be allocated on the K-12 payment shift schedule, so it shows up as $9 million in 15 with a lagging payment in 2016, reflecting the 90-10 appropriation schedule. Line 75 was originally Senator Lori's bill, and this one was a previous question in response to Senator Anderson suggested that this was one time. In fact, it is ongoing, but it doesn't begin until fiscal 17. So this is enhanced equalization that will bring a few school districts on, and the assumption is that they will begin accessing, they'll sell bonds, and the equalization is reflected here. Then, Mr. Chairman and members, my next clarification is line 57, the elimination of the closed landfill account. What's actually happening here is that the author is recommending the elimination of a payback to the closed landfill account. So that's the payment stream that's currently built into the forecast, and that's being suggested for elimination. Line 174, Mr. Chairman, I joked with Kevin Lundeen earlier this morning that he undoubtedly would find an error that I made, and he did. On line 174, we should have carried a tail of $31,000, both for the division recommendation and the author's recommendation. So members should show $31,000 both in 16 and 17 for both years. And yes, you clarified the point on the one-time money, and that's all that I have, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cohen,
what I would propose then is not the adoption of the spreadsheet at this time, but to have the chairs present their articles in the order that we have, take questions, amendments as members might have, and then make sure there's plenty of time for amendments as we proceed later in the day.
All right. With that being said, should we start with Senator Saxhoff?
Yes.
Here.
Thank you for your patience. Okay. Senator Saxaw, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, presenting today's State Department's and Veterans Budget Division Supplemental Appropriations Article. We had a modest target, but I think we managed to craft a quality article, and I'd like to thank members of my division for their thoughtful discussion and good work. Mr. Chair and members, this article reflects nine bills that were heard in our division this session, one recommendation from the governor and two recommendations from the chair. Much of our work and our target relate to military and veterans affairs, and I'm proud of the work that we've done in that regard this year. So with that, I would like to turn this over to Kevin Lundeen, our fiscal analyst, and Stephanie James, our Senate counsel, to walk through the spreadsheet and the language. After that's done, we'll be available, obviously, for questions that the committee might have, and then we're going to offer a number of technical amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Saxaw. To Mr. Lundeen, introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Kevin Lundeen, the fiscal analyst for the committee. And I will talk to the spreadsheet and also Section 2 of the bill, which has the appropriations. So taking a look at that, the first appropriation is to the Legislative Coordinating Commission. There is a $300,000 operating cost increase. This is to the joint legislative offices. We heard some testimony in committee from the LCC and the Office of the Legislative Auditor. The second appropriation is, this was a bill of Senator Wieger's. This was establishing the Legislative Water Commission, and there's further language that in the bill that when Ms. James goes through, she'll talk in more detail about it. But we put in an appropriation of $155,000 with tails of $145,000, and that's essentially for a staff person and some of the operational costs of that. Moving down next to the Department of Administration, there's $150,000 in for developing a certification program for vets-owned small businesses. This came from Senate File 1805. It was a bill of Senator Saxhoggs. And essentially the money there is covering some compensation costs and some programming changes to the accounting system and software. The next appropriation is $250,000, and this is for grants to conduct housing needs assessment for veterans. And this came from a bill we heard in committee from Senator Hoffman. And when we do get to the amendment, I'll just point out we're going to add some language in there allowing admin to use up to 5% of the amount that we've appropriated here to cover some of the administrative costs of administering these grants. Next, moving on, we have an appropriation to the Racing Commission. This was actually a governor's recommendation, which we picked up. And this is just to cover some costs. There's been a shortfall and some issues with the Racing Commission lawsuits and that. So this is a one-time appropriation, and this is coming from their special revenue account. The next item is the Amateur Sports Commission. There's a $50,000 appropriation for a pilot program to reduce childhood obesity. Moving down next, the Minnesota Historical Society, there's a pass-through grant of $10,000 to Farm America. Next is the Humanities Commission, and there is an appropriation of $125,000 for the Veterans Voices Program. And then we also, within the rider, have language that transfers $25,000 of this appropriation to the AMPRS public radio stations. This is to provide some statewide promotion of the Veterans Voices program. Then moving down, the next appropriations. These are all related to a bill that Senator Saxhoggs had that was dealing with expedited and temporary licenses for military members. And so there's a number of appropriations to boards, the boards that were laid out in the language that Ms. James will get to, but essentially there's an appropriation to the Department of Education. This is for the Board of Teaching for $44,000, the Board of Accountancy, the Board of Architecture, the Board of Cosmetology, the Board of Barber Examiners, and then the Board of Private Detectives. And these were all general fund appropriations, basically to take care of some of the rulemaking costs with establishing this program. The next list of boards, I won't run through them all. They're basically the health-related boards that normally show up in Senator Lori's committee, but we made all the appropriations from the state government special revenue fund here. And so essentially for that program, for the licensure program, it's $206,000 coming from the general fund and $73,000 from the state government special revenue. And so that basically sums up the appropriation article. There's total spending in there of about $1.4 million with tails of about $1.1 million. And I'll turn it over to Ms. James to run through the language.
Okay. Ms. James.
Mr. Chair and members, Stephanie James, Senate Counsel. I'm going to start on the bill on page 5, line 26, which is section 3 of the bill. This section adds one person to the number of legislators who are permitted to be designated to receive additional compensation above what other members of the legislature receive. Section 4, which is on page 6, starting at line 4, establishes a legislative water commission. This is Senator Weger's bill, House File 683. Moving to page 7, on line 7.9, section 5 of the bill, and also the next section, section 6, which begins on line 7.27. These are from Senator Saxhog's bill, Senate File 1805, and these are clarifications and an establishment of a certification process for administration to use when giving a preference to veteran-owned small businesses. The preference itself was established last year, I believe, or maybe the year before, of about 6% on bids on state contracts. And so this is just establishing a procedure for certifying them. And then on page 8, on line 19, section 7, actually, section 7 through 12 are all language associated with establishing the temporary permits for the licensing boards that Mr. Lundeen mentioned, and which I'll say a little bit more about in a couple of pages. So that takes us all the way to page 10, section 13, that begins on line 7. This is Senator Champion's bill, Senate File 2201, and this clarifies the definition of who is an employee for purposes of parental leave for educational institutions. And then on page 10, line 22 is section 14, expedited and temporary licensing for former and current members of the military. And this is the language that establishes the program for providing expedited and temporary licenses for certain members of the military and certain spouses of military members. And then on page 11, section 15, line 18, this is an uncoded section that establishes the initial meeting and appointments and deadlines, dated provisions, so they're left uncoded, and this goes along with Senator Weger's Legislative Water Commission earlier in the bill.
Okay. Questions for Senator Saxhog or James or Mr. Lundeen? Okay, seeing none, Senator Saxhog?
If not, Mr. Chair, I offer the 816 amendment.
Okay, if we could have that distributed.
And Mr. Chair, just for clarification, Mr. Chair, we're going to adopt this amendment that reflects the changes from the spreadsheet. Is that, and maybe this, I should wait till I get the amendment, but then we're not going to adopt the bill. We're not going to pass the bill.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Senator Fischbach, as this amendment is being distributed, I should make it clear. I want to hold off on adoption of the entirety of the spreadsheet until the end.
Mr. Chair, I understand. I just want to make sure that I understand what reflects the significant changes we're making.
Yes. Do we have the amendment distributed, Senator Saxog?
So, Mr. Chair, members, I'm going to ask Ms. James to the A16 amendment.
Ms. James.
Mr. Chair and members, the A16 amendment on lines 1.2 through 1.3, as Mr. Lundin mentioned earlier, this is an allowance to the Department of Administration to use up to 5% of the amount appropriated for the housing needs assessment study that's in the bill. It allows them to use up to 5% of that to administer those grants. And then lines 1.4 through 1.11 of the amendment is the appropriation of $600,000 in fiscal year 15 to the Board of the Arts for the President's Turnaround Arts Initiative. And this is a change that Senator Cohen mentioned as he was going through the spreadsheet, and Mr. Lundin also mentioned earlier. And if the program doesn't go forward, if the state doesn't receive the federal grant, then this money is not appropriated. It's canceled. Then lines, beginning at line 1.12 in the amendment and going through line 2.21 are three sections that are from Senator Eakin's bill, Senate file 22, I don't have the file number handy. Senator Eakin's bill that makes certain changes to the Compensation Council. This removes from the current Compensation Council the authority and duty to give recommendations to the legislature on legislator salaries. And then on page 2, beginning at line 2.22 and going to the end of the amendment, line 5.19. These are each provisions that are board specific that give the licensing boards the language that they need to implement the temporary licensing licenses and permits for veterans. And again, that's essentially conforming technical changes that go along with Section 14 of the bill that establishes the expedited and temporary licensing program.
Questions on the A16 amendment? Senator Engelbertson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think the question probably can go to you, Mr. Chair, the Subdivision 6 Board of Arts. Can you tell me what the federal dollars are, or what the federal dollars are sought, or do we even know that?
Senator Engelbertson, I went through that in some detail, I think, before you got here.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to run through the whole thing again.
Fine. We can
Minnesota is a finalist for the President's Turnaround. Minnesota is a finalist for the President's Committee on the Arts and Humanities Turnaround Arts Program. And so this is a one-time appropriation where they're looking for state, school district, or municipal support for participation. So if Minnesota selected, the appropriation would be made. If not, it reverts back to the general fund. I'm happy to talk to you about it in more detail and show you my pictures later.
Mr. Chair?
I think I've seen that one picture you have on the wall.
Will there be a picture of you and Sarah Jessica Parker?
Actually, I took the picture of her when she was sworn in. So, but I think there are some pictures of the two of us somewhere. So, Senator Fischbach, here's the promise. If Minnesota is selected and Sarah Jessica becomes an artist assigned to Minnesota, I don't know if that'll be the case. I'll try to introduce the two of you, and you can compare fashion, shopping, whatever.
Shoes, Mr. Chair?
Shoes, yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll arrange that.
But I do expect, Mr. Chair, you to have a blow-up of the picture of you and Sarah Jessica for tomorrow's lesson.
I'll look for that at home somewhere. So, other questions?
Is that the blow-up picture at home?
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Saxog, there, on the temporary licenses for the military, it looks like there's 14 vocations that have been targeted or included. Is there an explanation as to how we lighted on those particular licenses? Are there other occupations that are not covered? Could you expand on that, on why we are establishing temporary military licenses for those specific vocations?
Mr. Chair.
Senator
Newman, I think what we did, I know what we did, we took the licenses and permits that were doable. Some of them were too expensive. We don't have all of them done. I consider this to be a project in the making, but I think we've got a really good start here. And as I've said earlier in my testimony, because this is my bill, is that there's only five states in the United States that haven't done something on this particular subject, and this will effectively remove us from that list of five.
Senator Newman.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Senator Saxog. And then just a follow-up question. I have not been in any committee where I've seen this bill, so I'm just curious, why is it necessary that we go to a temporary license system?
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, it's because we want to make sure that they can get to work quickly. Certainly they'll have a permanent license when they fulfill the qualifications for a permanent license. But what we're trying to do here is get them to work as quickly as possible, and so we have this process for temporary permits and licenses.
Further questions on the A16 amendment? If there are none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Yeah, Mr. Bodern.
So, Mr. Chairman, just for clarification on the Board of the Arts appropriation amendment that was just adopted, a sentence beginning on page 1, line 9, after the period, this is a one-time appropriation. Could be inserted to make that clear.
Senator Saxog moves that language. Is there discussion of that language? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Further discussion on the State Department's article. Members, what I'd like to ask then, Senator Pappas.
Are we taking other amendments now?
Well, certainly. Yeah. I asked if there was other discussion
or
amendments.
I'm sorry.
So.
I'm sorry. I was talking to some Concordia students. I had the 18.
Okay. If we have the A18 amendment.
Gov A18.
We could have that distributed.
Mr. Chairman, do you want me to start to explain it?
Well, it's just. Let's make the. I think. Okay, Senator Pappas.
Senator Sachs, I'll get a copy. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, this is a request that M&B, in consultation with the Commission on Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing Minnesotans, look at creating a central fund to help pay for accommodations for employees with disabilities. We used to have about 10% of our state employees had disabilities, and we're down to under 2% now. And originally, the State Department's division didn't consider this because it had a very high fiscal note. Subsequently, the fiscal note is down to like $8,000, and the department has said they can absorb that. So it's just for them to take a look at how they might help accommodate the different agencies and state government who are encouraged to hire people with disabilities.
Mr. Chair, I've spoken with Senator Pappas, and I'm fine with
it. And Senator Pappas, this is actually a bill authored by Senator Eaton. Is that correct?
I believe it is, yes.
And she's aware of this amendment?
I hope so. I did not talk to her personally. The commission asked me to offer the amendment.
Well, let me just suggest that you talk to Senator Eaton and make sure she knows that a bill of hers was included in this.
Okay, I'll tell her.
Supplemental finance bill. So we have Senator Pappas's motion. Is there further? Senator Fishbach.
Mr. Chair, I'm just curious. Given that it was a bill, did it receive a hearing, and does it have a fiscal note, and is there any other information we have?
The bill was going to be scheduled next week. I understand that the fiscal note... maybe Mr. Nauman could comment, but I believe the fiscal note indicated that the agency would absorb the cost, so that there was not a cost to the budget, is my understanding.
But there, are we going to get the fiscal note information if we're adopting this in finance?
Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Fishbach, I don't recall this off the top of my head, but I can certainly look it up in a few moments.
Mr. Fishbach, do you want to lay the amendment over till we see that?
No, I'd just like to see it. That's fine.
Okay. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It says here a central accommodation fund. Do you know if there was any figures that were established on that?
Senator Pappas?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if Mary Hartman is in the room. She would probably know the answer to that. So I don't know if we have any kind of estimate on that.
Is Ms. Hartman here? I don't see her. Senator Anderson?
Well, Mr. Chair, if there's going to be an establishment of that fund, and they're going to take care of it, but the thing is, if what happens in the next biennium then? I mean, even though they're going to do it now.
Mr. Chairman, it really just is to look at it. It's not to establish the fund. It's just a report on, you know, how much would it cost to provide accommodations to set up the SEPL fund. So it's just really to study it. So we don't have any concrete proposal yet on it.
If members have questions, we could lay the amendment. We're going to continue working on this. I guess I'm a little bit concerned if we don't have the agency here to answer some of the questions. Senator Pappas, do you?
Mary's here.
Okay. Sarban, if you might sit down, and Senator Anderson, if you could pose your question. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair. To the testifier, it says in here advantages and disadvantages of creating a central fund, and then it says policies needed to implement a central accommodation fund. I'm just wondering how much money is there a recommendation, because it's talking about recommendations. Are you coming forward with the recommendation of what you would need for that accommodation fund to meet the needs of these individuals?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, centralized accommodation fund would, and actually I just wanted to say that, yes, this was requested by Senator Eaton for Senator Pappas to bring forward, but the fund would be, the study would look at what other state agencies are doing, what the federal government is doing, and conduct research and to look and see what successful practices have been conducted in other states. We found through just preliminary research that having a centralized fund does lead to hiring agents who are hiring managers when they're not afraid of what the impact on their bottom line will be, They tend to hire more people with disabilities. The level of employment of people with disabilities in 1999 was 10.1%. Today it is 3.2%. And last year only 1.8% of all new hires had a disability. So this fund would get us started, we hope, in the right direction of looking at what best practices are and have been in other states that have led to increased employment. The department said that they would absorb the cost of the study, and we would work with them and convene groups of people with disabilities to look at whether or not this would be a best practice for the state to adopt and come back with recommendation. The department would come back with recommendations on how to move forward.
Senator Anderson. All right. Do we have further discussion then? We've had some of the questions answered on the A18 amendment. Senator Laurie.
Well, I mean, I have a question. I see it's MMB in consultation with the Commission on Deaf, Blind, and Hard of Hearing alone in trying to figure out the wisdom of creating this account for accommodations for employees with disability broadly, and why would we be having MMB just work with one group representing one set of disabilities when, you know, disabilities are much broader than just people with hearing loss.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Lowry, our commission has been convening for the last 2 years a broad group of stakeholders that have been a broad-based group of stakeholders across disability that have been making recommendations how to increase employment across the board with people across the board. And so we've been the convener with a number of different disability groups. And so this is just targeted for this year, and we're just going to continue to work with that group and make – and this is one of the recommendations that came out of this group. We have agreement with the other disability councils that will take the lead in this and continue to convene the group.
Okay. Further questions? Mr. Bodden, you had some language you wanted to suggest.
So, Mr. Chairman and members, it's just a matter of terminology. The study refers to a central fund, and I think typically the practice would be to create an account in the special revenue fund that would be dedicated for these purposes. So I just have a technical amendment that I'd recommend. And then the other item that I'll mention, too, is the way the report is directed is a little general and doesn't fit with the usual practice of directing it to the relevant chairs and ranking minority members. So I'll try to do this as quickly as possible. On page 1, line 3, after of, delete central accommodation fund and insert special revenue account for central accommodations. And then on page 1, line 5 of the amendment, delete legislature and insert chairs and ranking minority members of the Senate Finance Committee and the House Ways and Means Committee. And then on page 1, line 6, delete A central and insert an account in the special revenue. And then on page 1, line 12, delete A central. And then on page 1, line 13, delete accommodation. And after, and then insert an account in the special revenue. And after the comma on line 13, insert if one is recommended under this section, comma. That would clean it up.
Senator Pappas?
Thank you, Mr. Bodden, for cleaning up this amendment.
So, Senator Pappas, you incorporated that
language
into
that
amendment.
Language.
Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bodden, would this special revenue fund be in the state treasury? I'm not used to seeing state treasury in the general language as well.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, I think that would be assumed. I guess it's excess verbiage. I don't think it does any harm.
Okay. Thank you.
We have the A18 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? Mr. Nauman.
So, Mr. Chair and members, I've pulled the fiscal note for this bill at Senator Fischbach's request. The fiscal note reports a $8,000 cost, as Senator Pappas reported, but it doesn't speak directly to the point about whether MMB can internalize the cost.
Ms. Harmon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the latest fiscal note that we pulled up had a zero, kind of a zero zero impact when we looked at it last, and I can pull out the. I believe I have.
Just to the first engrossment.
The department just said that they could absorb it, and they updated their fiscal note. As of yesterday, we were in committee, but I'll.
Senator Anderson.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I just wanted Mr. Anama to repeat the number.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, $8,000?
$8,000, thank you.
Well, Senator Pappas, why don't we lay this amendment over for just a minute and let Mr. Nauman, unless you have...
Mr. Chairman, I do. Unless there is a different file number, we pulled this up off of Senate File 2415, the first engrossment. That's the most recent one that I show on the M&B system. If there's, we could do a little digging and see if maybe Ms. Hartnett can clarify if there was a second file that we should be searching under, or a House file, perhaps.
It is in the House file, and.
Okay. Well, Senator Pappas, why don't we lay this amendment over for a minute and see if we can make sure we understand the cost, even if a minimal cost. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, it always amazes me how long we can have a debate over $8,000.
Just trying to be careful.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you give me about 3 minutes, I can come back with that.
Yep.
New
we'll come back to it. Is there further discussion or amendments relative to Senator Saxhog's article? Okay, what I'd like to do then is, and I don't think this will impact this amendment, we'll come back to the amendment, but just procedurally, I'd like to see if members would adopt the article. And again, just to make sure we're very careful procedurally, we have the article in front of us. So if somebody wants to amend the article right now as it is, with the, say, delete everything, it would still take a majority vote to do so. So even if we adopt this article for placement into the Senate file, procedurally things would not change in terms of any subsequent amendments. So, and we'll do it with Senator Pappas' amendment. We would still need a majority vote to adopt that amendment into the article. But I think it's going to be easier for staff in putting the bill together that if we find that, that if we adopt everything article by article, it'll be easier for staff then to compile this bill. But the bill itself will be in front of us, so if people have other amendments to a previously adopted article, it's not going to change procedurally where we are, nor does it shift the balance in terms of what kind of vote would have to be taken. So if...
So, Mr. Chair, so Senator Saxhog, I would move article that we approve in Article 1 of State Departments and Veterans Affairs.
All right. So Senator Saxhog, Mr. Bodner.
Mr. Chairman, I think there are actually several articles in that document. That's correct. So safe practice would be just to move the I beg your pardon. Most of these have multiple articles. The state government budget recommendations is contained in the state gov sup 2 document as amended. Proper reference.
All right. So Senator, Mr. Bodden stated the particular reference. Senator Saxhog moves adoption of the state gov 2 as cited by Mr. Bodern. If there's no further discussion on that, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. And again, this will all be open to amendments as we continue. Senator Anderson.
Maybe we should make it as amended?
Yeah, that would be correct. If that might be reflected, that the motion is as amended. So thank you for that clarification. And again, Senator Pappas, we'll get back to your amendment when we're ready to go, when we get a break as we proceed. Senator Saxhog, Mr. Nauman just told me that he has found the change in, let's see, Senator Fischbach, but has found the change in the fiscal note. Mr. Nauman?
So, Mr. Chair and members, The House fiscal note on House File 2785, the first engrossment, indicates that the agency can absorb the $8,000. So the testimony previously was, in fact, correct.
So, Mr. Chairman, do you want to take the amendment then now?
Yeah, let's do that now since we still have Senator Saxog here.
I'll move the A18 as with the technical changes suggested by counsel.
All right, so we have Senator Pappas's motion to adopt the A18 amendment to the previously adopted article. So I think everybody understands where we are. Is there any further discussion on that amendment? If not, all those in favor, Senator Engelbert.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, Mr. Nauman, did we come up with the number definitely here then? I'm sorry.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, there was a fiscal note completed on the House file that shows the $8,000 that was also shown on the Senate file. But in the House file fiscal note, which was completed at a later date, the agency indicates that it can internalize the cost, and so it nets out to zero. I'd be prepared to make copies for the committee. It might cost more paper.
And $8,000.
Thank you.
Okay. So we have Senator Pappas's motion. Is there further discussion? Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, if I understand, there's no cost, but the language will permit the activity.
That's my understanding, based on what Mr. Nauman has said. And I don't know if Senator Pappas, you have anything else to suggest. So we have the Pappas motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. So that concludes our work right now on Senator Saxog's portion of the bill. Again, let me make it very, very clear. If members have other concerns, amendments as we proceed, it's still in front of us. So thank you, Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
So next we have Senator Latz with the Judiciary Division recommendations to the Finance Committee. And so, members, all you have to do is work your way down the pile of paper to this next article. And as Senator Latz and I guess the staff are up there, Mr. Backus, Mr. Turner, there were no changes. In the spreadsheet I went through, there were no changes from what we see in front of us from Senator Latz. Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, members, my goal was to be done before Mary Hartman came back with the updated fiscal note. But it took too long to get to this point, so I will be as expeditious as I can on what is a very simple judiciary supplemental budget. There are, as the chair said, there are no changes relating to the tails, so everything is as it came out of division. There are basically three categories of appropriations in this bill. One is to cover the operating increase cost to maintain critical staff in the Department of Corrections institutions. One is to cover costs of prison population growth. There were 300 to 400 prisoners that were not accommodated in the state prison because the prisons are full. So they were housed in county facilities, and there's a cost to the Department of Corrections to pay the counties for use of those facilities. So that's the $11,089,000 entry on your list there. By the way, the institution list covers three different categories. And under the Department of Corrections, the $16,200,000 for the institutions and also the community services and operations support lines cover that category. So the total corrections change is $30,089,000. As the chair indicated, those are mostly the nature of deficiency expenses. The only other category of expenses here has to do with the cost for the expungement bill. The language for the expungement bill is proceeding separately. It's Senator Champion's bill, but we're carrying the cost here. And those costs relate to comparatively minor implementation, some staff to be able to handle the changes that would be necessary in the records when, if and when expungements are granted. And then in connection with that, There's a federal financial participation grant that can be used to offset some of those expenses, so that's included in the revenue adjustment line as well. So that's basically our budget provision. If you happen to answer any questions on that, and then I can tell you briefly what the language changes are also in our bill.
Sure, certainly, that's if you want to proceed with that.
All right, thank you. Members, Article 2 of the bill addresses continuances in juvenile proceedings. Right under current law, a continuance may be given to a case for a period of 90 days and then for an additional 90 days. And this, the practice in courts has been they'd like to keep some of these juvenile cases under their review for longer periods of time than that would allow. So what this does is it allows up to 180 days for the initial continuance and then an additional 180 days with the consent of the prosecutor and review by the juvenile court. And then the Section 2 on that bill is our effort to reduce some of the workload of the Judiciary Committee and also reduce some of the stops that individual members have to make with their bills. There's a provision in state law called a default misdemeanor. So any bill that you have that prohibits activity that doesn't specify the penalty is, by operation of a special statute, a misdemeanor crime in Minnesota. That's resulted in the creation of a lot of crimes that in past years haven't even gone through the review of the Judiciary Committee. We didn't like that idea, so we started pulling as many of the bills into the committee as we could figure out created these crimes. But what we've determined is that in a lot of cases, maybe a misdemeanor wasn't necessary. So we've created language that would, for all bills going forward, meaning not this session, but in the future that are created, the default consequence would be a petty misdemeanor, which is not a crime. Judiciary Committee would not have to see it. The maximum penalty is a $300 fine, no possibility of jail. And then if individuals in your own bills, if you decided you actually wanted a crime to be committed by failure to comply with the requirements of the law, you'd have to put a penalty section in there. It'd be a conscious decision, and the Judiciary Committee would then review that in connection with the wider scope of crimes in Minnesota. Members, I neglected to mention one of the appropriations as well, the Post Board, the Peace Officer Standards and Training Board. We need to make some technical changes to carry forward the appropriation that was made in the past so they're available for use as some of their programs have continued, have not been expended as promptly or as quickly as they thought it would be. And if you'd like some more detail on any of that, I have my capable staff here with me, and they can certainly correct any errors that I've made in my presentation.
So, Senator Lance, I'm not sure I heard, but relative to the county beds, so what's the increase in terms of beds, prisoners, over the last biennium?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we don't have any control over what sentences the judges impose. And as it happens, the judges have, in implementing the sentencing guidelines and other considerations in individual cases, have sentenced 300 to 400 more people than were projected to the state prisons for commitment. And so what's happened is our prisons are full. They can't take all of those people that are being committed by the state court judges. So instead of putting them in a full prisons, we are now housing, the Department of Corrections is now housing those individuals in county workhouses instead. When that happens, the law says the Department of Corrections shall reimburse the counties for their expenditures incurred in housing those prisoners, or at least some portion of those expenses. That carries with it a cost that was not budgeted for by the Department of Corrections.
Are there further questions for Senator Latz or staff? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Latz, you mentioned this increasing the amount of days that a child who's a delinquent based on, I guess, the judge's determination or those that are dealing with the individual. Was there a testimony in committee that gave an example of some circumstances that made this requirement or request for extra days?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, yes.
should give me an example.
Senator Cohen,
Mr. Chairman,
Chair.
Senator Anderson, there are a number of cases that come up, but sometimes 90 days just isn't long enough to see if the kid's going to straighten out a little bit, if they're going to get into chemical dependency treatment, if there were some other things that they were going to do before the case was resolved in juvenile court. So the idea was to allow the juvenile court to have a longer period of jurisdiction over that child to see if the child comes into compliance with what they're attempting to do. Right now, the total allowed was 180 days, two 90-day continuances. There are cases when the court wanted to watch the kid for a little bit longer than that in return for resolving the matter for the long term in a way which made sense. So this will allow the court on its own initiative to do a 180-day continuance of the proceedings, and if the prosecutor agrees to it, to do another 180-day continuance.
Mr. Chair.
Senator
Letts, was there testimony or examples of where this has proven to be successful as far as the continuation of the child on another 180, 360-day, basically a whole year for the situation? Was there testimony of or examples given by whoever to say this is proven to be successful?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, the courts have not been allowed to continue cases beyond a total of 180 days under present law. So I can't give you an example of a case where 365 days proved to be successful because they haven't been allowed to do that. We did have testimony, and I do some practice in juvenile court as well. In my experience, as well as the testimony that we received, would indicate that there are times when kids need longer to get their act together. And sometimes the prospect of getting a real positive resolution in court is a better incentive for a child and their family to come into compliance with the goals of the court than actually a sentence and some consequences relating to implementing or executing a sentence.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
Oh, I just want to add to that, because what happened in the county support, this is Minnesota Association of Counties position, and the prosecutor supported too, because what happens is they sometimes have to go into residential treatment, and they can't even get a bed in residential treatment for 60 days or better. And in other cases, since we have such a shortage of child psychiatrists and psychologists, they can't get in to a treatment program, just an outpatient treatment program for that long. So that's why they want to give them the opportunity to, when the judge sentences them to do certain things during that period of time, oftentimes they can't get it done at the time. So that's what the concern is. So then if they don't make it during that period of time, well, of course, then they have a record, and then their life is messed up for good, so they just want to give more time to go through treatment.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. More of a statement than a question. I know, Senator Letts, that the state is, this is not uncommon for the state to be overpopulated. They've brought prisoners to other areas of the state to seek out beds, and in fact, I think there was as many as five or maybe even 600 in the Appleton prison when that was open. There were state-committed prisoners. Maybe Mr. Turner can help me with this. What is the average per diem now the state is going to be paying to the counties for the state prison beds? Do you know?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, it's my understanding that we're paying $55 a day to the counties.
Mr. Chair. Maybe a good note for the members of the committee to know that $55 a day for a state prison inmate is a bargain, to say the least. Quite frankly, I think the per diem rates in a lot of different times, a lot of different figures thrown around about what we at the state pay when they're incarcerated in our facilities, but it's upwards of over $100 a day. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, our marginal per diem when we have space in the prison system is about $54 a day, but the average per diem is about $70 a day. And, of course, it depends on which prison you – each prison has a different per diem. Oak Park Heights would have a higher per diem than Faribault, et cetera. But the average per diem statewide is $70 a day.
70. Okay. Thank you.
Further questions for Senator Latz? If not, Senator Latz, do you want to move your article?
Mr. Chairman, I move my article.
Mr. Bodron, if you could maybe
make the correct motion. Characterize it properly because there are several articles.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's sufficient just to move the SC 9826-1 document for inclusion in Senate File 2785.
So moved.
So Senator Latz has made that motion. There are no amendments to the article. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Latz and staff. All right, the next division we have is Senator Bonoff, Higher Education.
Thanks.
Why don't you get my stuff up there? Senator Fischbach.
As Senator Bonoff get prepared? Sir, and I would point out, please invite.
And I think that's a good point. Obviously, in the full committee with these omnibus bills, we normally don't take testimony unless there are amendments or questions raised. But I certainly think that where we've made changes with the spreadsheet that are of some significance, we should maybe invite some testimony from Chancellor Rosenstone or others relative to this article. But Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Fischbach. I concur with that request, and I know Chancellor Rosenstone is anxious to do that. So, members, I will first allow our fiscal analyst, Maya Weidman, to take us through the spreadsheet and then ask counsel to take us through the bill and then be prepared to offer one amendment as well as discuss the provisions of the bill.
So, Ms. Weidman?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you look at the spreadsheet, it's relatively straightforward. The first line at the top would be the appropriation of $1 million to College Possible. This is a mentoring program to help students get ready for college. The next line would be the $17 million for Minscu to meet contract obligations. For the University of Minnesota, there is a one-time operating increase that would go to Duluth to help them with some fiscal issues they're dealing with on the campus there. There is the $5 million for the regenerative medicine research, which was mentioned earlier by Senator Cohen. So the total amount going to the U would be $7.5 million. Then there are two small grant programs, one for developing competency standards in a number of different areas, including advanced manufacturing and IT. That's $250,000. And then there's also a $232,000 appropriation for a workforce program evaluation project. Also, this is actually within the state grant program. There was because of reduced enrollment, there was some money left in that program. It's not really reflected in here, but both the governor and Senate will be increasing within the formula to determine the state grant amount a student gets, the amount that's used to determine living and miscellaneous expenses, and that'll be increased in the formula from $7,900 to $8,300. And there will also be an increase in the four-year tuition cap, which is the amount that is, again, recognized in terms of tuition costs for students attending four institutions that offer four-year programs. and that will be going up from $13,000 to $13,620. There is really no cost to that because all that will happen within the state grant program, and there's enough money there to accommodate these changes.
Thank you, Ms. Weidman. So if there are no questions on the spreadsheet or Senator Miller.
Sir Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a question on the spreadsheet, but I do have some concerns, and I'm sure the Chancellor will address some of these concerns. But coming out of the division, one of our top priorities, and I appreciate Senator Bonoff, and she included me in on many of these meetings. One of our top priorities, Mr. Chair and members, was working with Minscu to address this issue and the tails, especially as they continue with contract negotiations and the elimination of the $17 million per year, $34 million over the biennium for the tails is extremely concerning for me, and I hope that we can continue to work on this issue. This report had strong bipartisan support coming out of committee, and I'm concerned that that we're going to lose some support over that issue. So, Mr. Chair, I hope that we can find a way in a bipartisan manner to fully fund those tails so they can continue on with those contract negotiations.
And Senator Miller, as you heard me earlier, I don't disagree, and we'll have some time to work on this. And if you can use that tail figure of $750 million and come up with the money that matches that, please let me know.
Mr. Chair, I will certainly try to find a way. Let me look at the numbers here.
Great.
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller is the lead on that committee, and so we have worked very closely. And so that's, you know, we did have a bill that left our division with very strong bipartisan support. And so I have expressed to the chair how much I'm disappointed in dealing with the tails by using, you know, this as a vehicle. And so I know, with all due respect, that you share some of those concerns, Mr. Chair. And so you have been very appreciative of these concerns, and so I'm hopeful we do find a way to address it.
And I'll repeat what I said earlier. Senator Bonoff, you're correct. I do share the concerns. I think it makes parts of this bill difficult, Senator Miller. I agree. You know, it's simply arithmetic. And so you've got the entire bill in front of you. And if you can help me out with the arithmetic over these next several hours, I'm certainly willing to consider that.
Sir.
You just have to get to a figure of 750.
Sir Chair, how much did you take for your arts thing?
At 600.
I'm just kidding.
That was 600,000. So, and that's also in the current biennium. There are no tails to it. So the answer actually is zero. For your question, the answer is zero. But I'm dead serious. If people want to take a look at the budget we have and determine where we can get what actually is $68 million toward the tails, let me know. If this committee, we don't have the ability to, and I mentioned again, and I want to just reemphasize what the House has done with that agreement. The House has reduced that agreement by $150 million. You give me that $150 million, and I promise you this is the first thing that would be reinstated.
Mr. Chair.
I don't have that authority. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, you mentioned the agreement and that the House has broken the agreement. If the House has broken the agreement, is there still an agreement? And why are we still honoring it?
There is not an agreement, I would guess. You'd have to speak to the Senator Bach about that. But in the same way I offered direction internally to the Senate Finance Committee relative to division targets and where we are, I get directions offered to me, House or no House. And the direction presented to me was 750. Now, if on the floor of the Senate, you know, we don't have a budget resolution, that we've adopted. If on the floor of the Senate decides to do otherwise, and reduce that 750 figure, I guess by majority vote the Senate could do so. But within this committee, I'm dealing with a figure of 750. Sarah Miller.
Mr. Chair, just a quick question just for members to be clear. When the higher ed division report left committee and came to the finance committee, it did meet the targets, but the targets changed. Is that correct?
The TALES target. Well, Sarah Miller, let me be clear. Because things were uncertain with the tax bill and other things proceeding on a parallel track, for instance, the one-time money for bonding. Because things were proceeding on a parallel track, we weren't quite sure where we were going with TALES. So there was not a TALES target given to divisions. It was only a general fund target for this biennium. And, you know, we weren't quite sure where things might go. And I also want to go back and just repeat what I had said at the outset. Because, Senator Fischbach, you asked about, okay, if there's no agreement, why are we abiding by this? I only made that comment vis-a-vis the House that when people show up, whether within the Senate or outside the Senate, to say, well, the House is doing this, why can't you? I just want to point out that the House is adopting a significantly different number by way of what they keep on the bottom line than the state Senate up to this point. I want to make that very, very clear. That's why I make reference to the House, not necessarily to an agreement. Sarah Miller.
Mr. Chair, I think the last time I mentioned the House in this committee, you gave me a nice little lecture about that we don't reference the other chamber.
Yes,
I just heard you say House about 10 times here in the last 2 minutes.
Well, and that's correct, and that's the exception that proves the rule. So,
Mr. Chair.
That was an exception.
Mr. Chair. As long as we are on this subject, I would just like to give those who are not on higher ed just a little bit of history about the $17 million. Last session, the Senate higher ed bill, as it came off the Senate floor, had a tuition freeze for the University of Minnesota and did not have a tuition freeze for Minsku. Okay. In conference, we accepted the House position and froze Minsku's tuition. When we did that, we heard from Minsku that was an unexpected change. The governor had not recommended it either, and that it created a $17 million hole in their operating funds. So we were able to cobble together from various places $17 million within the overall higher ed budget and put that forward as a one-time appropriation. After session was over, we heard loud and clear that caused a significant problem for Minsku, because when they said they had a $17 million hole in their operating, they didn't mean a one-time problem. They meant in their base operations. And so what we did is we worked over the interim and talked to them and agreed that we would come back, if at all possible, and fix that. And so that's why in this, both the governor's recommendation, our recommendation, the House's recommendation, it did have the $17 million in addition in the TALES, because that was actually the fix. And so you'll hear from Chancellor Rosenstone the impact of making this change. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll ask counsel to take us through the bill.
Mr. Fuller.
Good morning. I'm working off the document JCF 39-2 on page 4. The policy language begins. You have to remember this is the Higher Ed and Workforce Development Committee, so there's workforce issues here. The interface between higher ed and work is substantial. So Section 7 amends current law that provides outcome reporting on workforce programs under the jurisdiction of the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development, makes changes to that section. And there are some related provisions later on. There's a little bit of money for that. Section 8 on page 6 is part of two sections, one of two sections relating to the issue of reciprocity for essentially online courses and the burden that our current registration law puts on the operation of those programs. So this facilitates or authorizes the Office of Higher Education to enter into agreements which will allow the more efficient use of online higher ed resources across the country. Section 9 is one of three or four sections having to do with the authority of the Office of Higher Education, a new authority given to them to refinance higher ed student loans. As everybody is aware, there's a large debt burden, and the hope is that with the office can get some lower cost financing and perhaps buy down the cost of some of these loans. Section 9 just applies current oversight provisions to that aspect of the program. Section 10 is the program. As you'll notice on page 7, line 9 and 10, that the office cannot begin operating the program until June of 2015. This is because they're going to come back next session, report on the details of the program, and give the legislature another shot at that. Those details weren't prescribed because we're not familiar or don't actually know at this juncture what the market wants with respect to the program. Section 11 allows funds in the current Office of Higher Education Administered Capital Loan Fund to be used for this purpose. There's a limit of $100 million. I think there's about an $800 million authorization. Section 12 is a Senator Dibble bill having to do with research dogs and cats and their those being made available to rescue operations, animal rescue operations, before they're euthanized, unless they're going to be euthanized for the purpose of research. Section 13 is a corollary to the reciprocity agreement. Spells out more detail on that. Section 14 is a study abroad program. There have been some tragic incidents in some of these programs, and this section takes a regulatory light approach to provide information on the safety and the standards programs that our post-secondary institutions use, and just putting them on the Office of Higher Education website. It's coupled with later language, which requires a report from OHE as to whether any additional regulation is advisable, and if so, what that would be. Section 15 is part of the workforce interface issues here. This is allowing the Commissioner of Labor and Industry to grant exemptions for a certain limited number of programs from the child labor law to allow training of our youth in certain apprenticeship programs. Section 16 was described by Ms. Weidman. It has to do with the tuition cap and the living and miscellaneous expense allowance under the state grant program. It increases those, each of those. Section 17 is part of a long, long track record of trying to make sure that credits are transferable, particularly among MNSCU institutions. It asks the Board of Trustees to come up with a plan to be submitted by legislature, so if somebody gets a two-year degree within the system, specified degrees, that there's a plan that they can then go on to a state university and take 60 credits to complete. In other words, giving full value to the college credits earned. Section 18 is another one of the workforce programs. It's trying to get some cooperation between the training institutions and the business community as to exactly what sort of competencies they're looking for in their employers, in their employees, so that then the training institutions can provide that sort of training and provide those skills. Section 19 is a bill, language from a bill that was proposed by Senator Eakin. It's not currently funding. He was seeking funding. Just what the opportunities and the risks are of the oil production in North Dakota with respect to the Minnesota economy, particularly in northwestern Minnesota. I believe it was related to the committee that there are both opportunities and problems created by this oil production in North Dakota. Section 20 is the refinancing loan report I mentioned earlier, where OHE is going to come back and tell us what they think they need in the way of legislation to get this program up and running. Section 21 requires another workforce provision, a report from the Commissioner of Deed with respect to their workforce programs. Section 22 is, I think, a current study that's going on about the net impact analysis of those programs by the Commissioner of Deed, and it sets a date of December 1st to report to the legislature. Section 23 is a study abroad program, a report that I mentioned, what's the appropriate level of regulation, if any, OHEs to come back to or report back to the legislature. And the repealer is part of your packet. It's on the last page, the language that's repealed. It's a current accountability provision that is being, I think, replaced by language in the bill on accountability. That's the policy language.
Sir Manoff?
Mr. Chair, just in summary, what I would like to do is let the committee know that our division has three goals that are stated. We stated at the beginning of last session, and that's continued through this work. And those three goals and objectives are, number one, to reduce debt for our students, number two, to increase completion rates for our students, and number three, to do what we can to provide workforce development so that we meet 21st century workforce needs. And so with this bill, with regard to the debt, Mr. Fuller talked about the Office of Higher Ed being able to refinance loans, and currently many of our students are paying, you know, 7-8 and above percent interest rates. By giving the Office of Higher Ed the ability to do this, currently they offer financing through the self-loan program, but there's a federal prohibition on the self-loan program. They're not allowed to market this. And so even though students could get more advantageous loans through that program, that they're restricted from advertising this. By offering this ability, I think we can do something for our students with regard to lowering the cost of their debt. And that coupled with the Miller provision, whereby we can work on the transferability of credits, I think we really use this bill to further those goals. With regard to increasing completion, I would cite a couple things. One is the insertion of the Senator Cohen provision with regard to College Possible, because College Possible actually takes our juniors and seniors in high school who are most at risk for either not attending based on several risk factors, or if attending, them not completing. And they have a track record whereby 95% of the low-income at-risk students that they put through their program, and they follow them all the way through college, 95% of them complete college. And so by supporting that, coupled with, again, I would point to the transfer provision, I think this bill does increase our ability to fulfill that objective. And then finally, some of the things that I'm most excited about within this framework are the things with regard to the workforce. Having the workforce initiative as part of the higher ed is new, and so it's taken us some time to build that. But we spent some time in the committee looking at all the various workforce development funds. There's actually $50 million a year spent on workforce development funds, as Senator Tomasoni knows. We had the deed commissioner and staff come and present those to us, and then within this bill, we have put forward a requirement that we have more accountability, that we understand where those funds are going, what are we getting for those, so that we can actually step back and look at, is this the best use of our money? And then the pilot project that Mr. Fuller talked about is called the Pipeline Project, and what that is, it's an attempt to take the workforce track program that exists right now. And so, for example, in Germany, where 70% of the students are partnered with industry as they enter college, trying to look at a Minnesota model of doing just that. And so Pipeline stands for private investment, public education, labor industry experience. We've picked four industries that have emerging either growth potential or shortage areas, and we've said that we want advisory councils to develop what would competency standards look like if we were to develop programs where we could do those types of, quote, apprenticeships, but where
calling them pipeline projects. So that gives you kind of the context for why the bill's in the shape it's in, and I do have one amendment.
Okay, well, before we get to amendments, question, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bonhoff, the pipeline, where's it in the bill? I'm trying to.
Very good. It's in the bill in a few different places.
Next to the oil pipe.
10.1 section 18 directs the Commissioner of Labor and Industry in conjunction with the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development to establish competency standards for programs in advanced manufacturing, healthcare services, information technology, and agriculture.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, it's not specifically designated as pipeline in the bill. It's just that those are that's what it's underneath that heading.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, that's correct.
Thank you.
So, Senator Bonhoff, a couple of questions. North Dakota Oil, not quite sure. Would there be the need, if we're going to take a look at that, to get information out of North Dakota to make that complete?
Mr. Chair, this is a provision Senator Eakin had worked pretty hard with the people in his local community who would like that information. Right now, his community is feeling, you know, some effects of what's going on there. And when we were up visiting Moorhead, we actually saw some problems up just affiliated with that university in terms of their growth, their employment. And so I don't have an answer for that question. I can get that answered for you. But
well, I just wonder, because it talks about analyzing the effects of current and projected oil production in North Dakota. If the oil production were to cease tomorrow morning, and we don't know about that proposal to cease the oil production tomorrow morning, would that affect the study then? I mean, that's why I'm wondering what access we'll need to North Dakota demographics and information.
We're not going to stop oil production or any time.
And it sounds like there's not really an answer to that. So,
Mr. Chair, as I said, Senator Eakin asked to have this be a part of this because of the workforce side of our committee and the impact that what's going on across the state line is having on his community.
Okay. That reminds me of something very small. I'm not going to suggest any changes, but my predecessor, two or three folks removed, Senator Miriam, hated the use of the word impact in the statute. Mr. Fuller will remember that, I believe.
You had an impact on me.
Not a significant impact. So, Senator Bonhoff, when you're making the requirements for some of these studies, you've run this by the commissioners or folks from the agencies so they're able to do this because you don't have an appropriation for some of these studies, I don't believe.
Mr. Chair, we have the appropriation for the workforce study. The Senator Eakin study, I let him know that we didn't have the funds for that and that we would be willing to move it forward and funds, if it's possible to get that done, it'll happen.
And it's my understanding that Commissioner Pogemiller indicated that the Office of Higher Education would be able to handle some of this. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that would not be the study of the North Dakota oil.
No, the other studies.
Oh, yeah. DEED, we've been working closely with DEED with regard to the studies that impact DEED, and the Office of Higher Ed would be doing the study abroad, and they have said they can accommodate that. And we do have the appropriation for DEED with regard to their study. And when we talk about the net impact analysis, which is the word you don't like, that study is actually currently being done by the Governor's Workforce Development Council, and so all we're doing is getting a report on that. The new
report card with regard to the workforce development funds. We did put an appropriation in the bill. Oh good. Thank you.
Senator Egan,
and
did
Mr.
you
Chair,
wish to...
And I understand there were questions in regard to the oil study language.
Well, my particular question was, to what extent do we need access to information from North Dakota in terms of demographics or something that might not be within the purview of Minnesota agencies to put together some kind of working on a comparative or impact basis?
Yeah, and Mr. Chair and members, the intent of the study was to find an independent entity. The original language was not to have DEED do it itself, but for DEED to basically contract out and find an independent entity which would have some previous knowledge of these issues. And it said specifically in the language there were three different things that they wanted this entity to have specific knowledge of. It would include the oil industry in North Dakota and the broader oil industry, and also Minnesota economics and finances. And one of the groups that would be an example of that might be Global Insight, which does forecasting for Minnesota, which also does understand the oil industry in North Dakota and has done work with that as well. So it would be something like that, but it would be an outside entity that would be doing it. It wouldn't be DEED itself. DEED would simply be contracting out for this. That was the intent in the original language.
Okay, well, then I'm a little bit concerned because, Senator Bonhoeff, if you're going to propose contracting with Global Insight, and I've dealt with them a little bit, there better be some money to contract with
Mr.
Global
Chair.
Insight. That's pretty expensive.
Mr. Chair, originally Senator Eakin asked for a $150,000 appropriation, and so if at the end of the day there's nothing on the bottom line to be able to accommodate that, then Senator Eakin understands that this report may not be able to happen.
Mr. Chairman?
Well, I haven't. Senator Eakin, when you mentioned Global Insight, not that I've ever tried to contract with Global Insight for anything, but I can only assume that that would not be inexpensive. And I don't know about the $150,000 if we're talking about Global Insight. But we can discuss that as we proceed. We're going to work on this
Thank
over
you.
The next day or so.
And then, Mr. Chair,
Senator Egan?
Just thought I'd mention that there was discussion about the possibility of leveraging, you know, some private funds also into funding, because there would be a great deal of interest among, you know, a number of different industries that might also have interest in this.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bonhoeff, Section 10 on student loan refinancing. On the top of page 7, it goes through some of the criteria that's listed. And as I'm reading it, you know, the way it is laid out gives me some concern. It says that the office can refinance student and parent loans under terms and conditions that the office prescribes. It says that the office can establish credit for borrowers and determine what type of student and parent loans would be eligible for refinancing. Then it says that refinancing loans, the loan doesn't have to have even gone through and been administered by the office in the first place. And it just strikes me as this is some really wide open authority that doesn't really seem to, or doesn't feel to me like it's regulated in any manner. There's nothing in here that talks about whether security should be provided for the loans. Doesn't address the liability of the state versus the loan that is being paid off. I mean, what was there testimony in the committee about any of these concerns? It really does seem like almost unlimited authority to refinance these loans, and would give me a fair amount of concern.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to start with Mr. Fuller responding, and then I'll follow up.
Mr. Fuller.
Member Senator Newman. With respect to that, the loans need not have been made through the agency. That's because the agency loans are fairly reasonably priced, and the hope is that they can refinance the private lender loans that are at 9% or so. Otherwise, this program wouldn't have much traction. You're right that there's not a lot of detail. The problem is there are several other states doing this, but it's a little bit in its infancy. And so the key to this program would be that there would be a spread between what the office paid for its financing and what the interest rate was on the student's loan, so that they could issue refinancing loans at a lesser rate. Otherwise, the program would have no purpose. And if you look down on lines 9 to 10, it was understood that there might have to be more detail, but that detail really is driven by the market. You know, what is attractive to the market? And so there's no authority for the office to do this until June of next year. And in the interim, they're required to come back with a report telling us what the details are. And, you know, that's not perfect, but that was the thinking. The terms in here, the $70,000 is the current limit on student loans. The $100 million, this is available money. They would not actually have to go to the market now because there's money available in that fund. I was told, I'm trying to remember, $200 million, something like that. So half of that is set aside, but they do not have to make any loans. This is an authorization.
Mr. Chair, in follow-up, Senator Newman, if you look on line 11.33 on page 11 and then following on page 12, that's where we ask the Office of Higher Ed to come back to us by February 1st of next year to report their intentions with regard to this program. We did have here similar concerns to the ones you have just voiced, and so the way we dealt with that is by not letting them make any loans until we've had a chance during the interim to do more research and then hear back from them on their intentions. And I know Commissioner Pogemiller is here as well as Ms. Grimes, if you'd like them to come and talk to you. But it should be noted that the Office of Higher Ed currently administers the SELF loan, so this is something that isn't new to that office. It's new to us in terms of thinking of them as a refinancing entity. But again, Mr. Fuller talks about how this is happening in other states, and the federal government has not responded, in my opinion, with the kind of urgency that is required given the crushing debt that our students are under and the interest rates that they continue to have to pay.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoff. Just one quick follow-up on it. When I read Section 10, it doesn't necessarily say what you have just recited, what will occur. I think it's Section 20. Because the effective date talks about loans that can be refinanced after June 1st, 2015. If, in fact, what's going to happen here is that folks are going to come back to the legislature and tell us what the recommendation is before this program is implemented, then I feel that's what Section 10 should say.
Mr. Chair, there's an additional section in the bill, Senator Newman, and that's on page 6, the legislative oversight on line 6.28. On 6.31, coming back to the chairs with any proposed material change to any of its student loan programs, which would be this program.
So that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So Senator Bonhoff, without question, department is coming back to the legislature to report to us before any loans are going to be refinanced.
Right.
Thank you, Senator Bonham.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bonhoff, I'm trying to recollect in the E-12 Education Committee, there was some legislation that tried to address the cost of remedial programs.
Mm-hmm.
and I can't remember exactly what happened to that, but it would seem to me that if there would be a one way we could help a lot of students with their costs of higher education, it would be to try to figure out a way to cover some of that remedial education with either, you know, lower cost programs or, and I don't think they're covered under the traditional Minnesota grant program. I'm not sure. It's been a while, but.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sump, the legislation that you're referring to was the bill that Senator Wieger carried that was the shared burden bill, where we said if a student has to take a remedial course, a third of it would be paid. And in Senator Wieger's bill, he said the state, I felt that it should be the district, but it was a third of that, a third by the student, and a third by the post-secondary institution. And that bill we heard in our committee, and it was heard in K-12, and there was a lot of interest. I think it was put there as a discussion and something we'd like to revisit next year. With regard to the grant question, Ms. Weidman, do you have an answer for that?
Madam Chair, Senator Sumpf, I believe the state grant does cover remedial ed courses, but those would not count towards the degree. So in a sense, they're using money for things that don't count towards the degree.
Further questions?
Yes.
Senator Engelbertson.
Sure. I apologize when Senator Eakin was here. I probably should have been asking this question. But Senator Bonhoff, with regards to Section 19, again, getting back to the North Dakota study on economic development, employment and economic development for the northwest part of the state, maybe it's more of a statement than a question, but are you aware that there's a lot of talk and even some bills floating around with regards to the Bakken Fields train cars coming, and they come through Moorhead, they come through parts of my district, and local units of government are very concerned about the dangers of these. The fact of the matter is, I think they're ordering, I don't know how many hundreds more cars, because there's getting to be more oil, obviously, coming through our area. So I'm wondering, and Mr. Chairman, maybe you can answer this, because you started that discussion here, and I'm glad you did, as to if we're going to put this in the bill, is this going to be absorbed by somebody? Is it going to cost something? There's no dollars attached. And I would ask that same question, Mr. Chair, and Senator Bonhoff, about Section 12, when we talk about the Humane Society, the humane treating of dogs and animals. It says here very clearly that the institution that utilizes these animals for research should offer the cat or dog to rescue organization. What kind of meat is really in this statute that's going to require this? And is there a cost to this? And is there something that's broken? Local Humane Society is not cooperating with the universities, or?
Mr. Chair, so there's two questions, Senator Ingebrigtsen. With regard to Senator Eakin's bill, you know, that really was added at the very end, and I think that if Senator Eakin doesn't find a way to fund that study, it may very well go. So it was really put in here as a placeholder because there isn't money in my budget for that, but I didn't want to just leave it on the cutting room floor. And so I'm hopeful that perhaps Senator Eakin will talk to Senator Tomasoni. Perhaps that might, you know, there might be some, I don't know. But we're not asking anybody to absorb the cost of that. And so if the committee, because of that, would be more comfortable with taking that out, you know, I would entertain that. I still think it's a worthwhile study, and so if we could keep it alive for a couple days to see if there's any way to fund that, I would prefer it, and I'd like to help Senator Eakin. With regard to the research dogs and cats, there's no fiscal note to that. This is an initiative brought forth by Senator Dibble. He brought it forward last year as well. You might have gotten emails about it. Was called the Beagle Freedom Bill. It's a Oh, my gosh. When we heard it last year in committee, there were...
I've got a golden retriever, so I'm very upset about that.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, I've only had golden retrievers, and so I stand with you on that. But this is a situation whereby it's really taking place at the University of Minnesota. They use dogs for research, and this bill said that when possible... These dogs could be, if they were in good shape, they could be adopted out. And so there's a movement around the country to shape our laws like this. Last session, we had some issues around it with regard to liability. The University of Minnesota worked with us on this. They helped craft the language so that they were comfortable, and that's why you see it here in this bill. There is no fiscal cost.
The chair, apparently the universities that are euthanizing all the animals are not utilizing them. So there is something here that's actually going on. Okay. But there is no fiscal note to this as well.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, there, if you're saying the university may have a cost if they didn't euthanize, but that would be between the university. I mean, there's no cost to the state. And the university accepted the proposal and is comfortable with it.
Okay. All right, Senator Bonhoff, I don't know if there are other general questions. I know you wanted Chancellor,
amendment.
Pardon?
An amendment?
Well, before we take amendments, let's have finish discussion, general discussion. Thanks. You want Chancellor Rosenstone, I believe, to testify.
Thank
is
you.
That correct?
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Fishback.
Not the amendment to reflect the spreadsheet.
Right.
Thank you.
Right. So, Chancellor? But Chancellor wanted and Ms. King. And so members know that I like history. That was one of my majors. A little bit of history, because what this involves is the tails. And years ago, nobody cared about a tails budget in this place until Governor Carlson came into office. And Ms. King was Governor Carlson's second finance commissioner?
Correct.
You succeeded Commissioner Gunew.
Correct.
And so this kind of brings everything full circle a little bit. Because members, that was one of the best and most fiscally responsible changes made to the budgeting process in this place, mm-hmm. was when Governor Carlson demanded through Commissioner Gunew and I forget, Ms. King, if you were the budget director or the deputy commissioner, but when Governor Carlson and the finance department made the demand that we were to pay attention to a tails budget, nobody ever did anything like that before Governor Carlson came into office. So the discussion we're going to have is about tails. So, Chancellor Rosenstone.
Senator Cohn, members of the committee, I'm very much appreciate the opportunity to be very brief with you this morning. I fully appreciate the conundrum that you're facing. And I'm also, I guess, happy that you're very concerned about the recommendation that you're considering. Happy to hear that Senator Fischbach's concern, that Senator Miller's concern, that Senator Bonhoff's concern. And to be really clear, I'm deeply concerned about the recommendation as well, because the package that you're trying to solve, the conundrum or puzzle you're trying to solve, is actually being solved on the backs of our faculty. And I would strongly urge you to try to do something about it, and I'm excited that there's an interest in trying to do something about it. The problem we're trying to solve is a problem that's left over from the last session. And before the bill closed, Vice Chancellor King testified to the conference committee that the bill as written was leaving a problem that would not provide sufficient funds for competitive compensation for our faculty. I personally have met with many members of this committee. Our presidents have met with members of this committee and the education committees, and in the House as well. Oops, sorry, I said that word. The House as well. And I think everybody's understood over the last 9 months what the issue is. We simply do not have enough base funds to provide base increases to our faculty in this biennium. A little background. Our faculty took, over the last 4 years, 3 years of a hard salary freeze. There are no other state employees that took a hard salary freeze 3 years in a row. There are no other faculty at any college or university, public or private, in the state of Minnesota that took 3 years of salary freezes over the last 4 years, and they did it for very important reasons. Number one, to protect the quality of the programs we're providing our students. Secondly, to protect the ability of their colleges and universities to serve their communities. And finally, to protect affordability, to cushion additional blows to students from tuition increases. And now is not the time to leave our faculty behind where other employees in the state will be in this biennium. As it stands now, the appropriation that's available to us from last session only allows enough funds to be brought to the table for base salary increases for our faculty to be roughly one-half the base salary increases that have gone to other employees in the state of Minnesota and other employees in Minsk-U. Our faculty cannot be left behind. And quite frankly, to suggest that we use one-time money with our faculty rather than base increases, or to use one-time money and pretend it's really base money, and then, don't worry, we'll try to figure this out next session. Well, if we did that, I suspect we'd be heartily and appropriately criticized for being fiscally irresponsible to leave for our system and for our students a tail of $34 million. So this situation is indeed a serious one. It's left over from the last session, and it really does need to be fixed. A word about our faculty. These are the people that are serving 430,000 students in 54 communities around the state of Minnesota. These are the people that are preparing graduates for the careers that are needed for communities around our state and for business and industry to be prosperous and for our state to be prosperous. These are the people who are ensuring that workers around the state are at the cutting edge of their professions. These are the people that are educating 61,000 students of color this year, more students of color than all the other higher education systems in the state combined. These are the people that are serving 11,000 vets this year, more than all the other colleges and universities in the state of Minnesota combined. These are the faculty that are serving 14,000 more students than a decade ago. These are the faculty that delivered on 4 of the 5 performance metrics that you set for us. We are very heartened by the support we received from the governor. We're very heartened by the support we received by the other chamber, to avoid the House word. We're very heartened by the support we received from the Higher Education Committee. And we're very heartened by the support we received from many members of this committee and the concern that you've expressed over the recommendation you're considering. This is a must-do item. Please do not leave our faculty behind. They are the people serving 430,000 students around our state.
So, Chancellor, let me ask some questions, if I might. You and I discussed this issue post-session when you came to see me, and so I expressed your concern. I have a couple of questions, but first, I don't want to necessarily revisit the entirety of last year's session, but what happened in the continuum of the budget process last year that this issue wasn't taken care of during the 2013 session?
Chair Cohn, I can't answer the question of what was going on in the negotiations within the conference committee. What I can do is be very clear that the budget we originally proposed and that the governor recommended, and as Chair Bonhoff mentioned, the Senate recommended, did not have this problem as part of the recommendation. We also made it very clear in conference committee that the bill that was being considered, which had the $17 million as one-time money in 1 year of the biennium, was not sufficient to close even modest compensation increases for our faculty.
And you testified to that effect before the conference committee?
Vice Chancellor King did, yes, sir.
And so we concluded the session with the Higher Education Committees knowing that this was an issue to be revisited this year in all likelihood. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, Chair Cohn, again, I can't speak for the Higher Education Committees, but I think it was clear to everybody, and we began the conversations early in the summer, clear to the House with the position they took, clear with the Senate committee and the position they took, and clear with the governor that this was a problem they were committed to solving.
So let me pose a hypothetical. What happens if we had concluded last year's session with the bill we passed, signed by the governor, and we were facing a deficit this year, as we did 3 years ago and 4 years ago and 5 years ago and 6 years ago and 7 years ago. How would we have dealt with the issue then, hypothetically, if we'd concluded last year's session the way you did?
Chair Cohn, members of the committee, in the past when the state of Minnesota has faced those constraints, several things have happened. People took salary freezes, as our faculty did for 3 years. Secondly, there are deep cuts that occur on all of our college and university campuses that have a huge impact on our students and the communities they serve. And finally, we went through years of tuition increases that none of us wanted to do. With our tuition frozen, we're not in a position to raise any revenue, and I'm not suggesting that this chamber or the other chamber revisit that question. I'm not suggesting that at all. But the tools we've used in the past are not the tools we would use right now if we could avoid it, particularly in a context of other employees in the state receiving substantial increases in comparison to what's available to our faculty.
Okay, and you've suggested that, and I'm going to probably misparaphrase what you said, but I thought what I heard was that to suggest we do something on a one-time basis in this instance is unfair to faculty, or we're kind of leaving it up to the goodwill of a future legislature to take care of this. But is this something that's impossible as opposed to undesirable, impossible to live with for the next year?
Chair Cohn, I can't speak what we could or could not accomplish at the negotiating table. What I'm saying is that it would be irresponsible for our system to make long-term commitments for which we have no way to identify with a higher probability long-term funding. I think we would be hardly inappropriately criticized for doing so. I don't want to bring to the table to our faculty who have endured 3 years of hard salary freezes, one-time money, with the hope, stay tuned, we'll hope we get this fixed in the next biennium.
Okay. Further questions, discussion? Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Chancellor, are we hearing you say it would be better to not use one-time money, which then would likely get built into some future expectations, than to have one-time money, which is what we're looking at right now?
Chancellor.
Chair Cohn, Senator, we have at the moment the $17 million from FY14 that was appropriated last session, and the $17 million which is in the bill that can be used as one-time money. Is that better than zero? Yes. Is it come close to having it as base money so we can give a salary increase to faculty, not just one-time money? It doesn't come close to what we need, I think, to settle these contracts and to treat our faculty fairly, to keep competitive faculty in the classroom, not lose the talent we need to deliver the education that everybody's expecting us to deliver and we should deliver to the people of Minnesota. I think we run a great risk on the quality of what it is that the state needs and what we are prepared to provide and what our faculty can provide.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, I had that same question as I've gone between the end of last session and this session, because in the conference committee, when we did adopt the freeze and they identified the $17 million, it seemed to me that the $17 million we were giving them was what they asked for. And so, and there was some concern around this rider language. And so I wasn't clear at the end of last session that they weren't really able to negotiate deals with faculty if they didn't have base funding, that that's their practice, that that's their commitment. And so I, when we were touring the campuses, I actually looked a president in the eye and said, do you want me to just take that $17 million back? Because it seems to me that you don't even appreciate it. And they looked at me like they didn't know what exactly I was saying. So I can appreciate that question, but now I have come to understand that they won't really go to the bargaining table and make these arrangements with faculty unless they're confident about the long-term viability.
So, Mr. Chair, Chancellor, hypothetically, let's just say this: it stays one-time money. What do you do with it? Do you ever offer just one-time bonuses, or how do you handle that situation? Because or maybe you can expand on that a little bit more. What, because I'm getting that indication that sure, $17 million one time is better than nothing, but maybe it really is not something that's easy to work with, or it's people wouldn't appreciate it. Can you just expand on that a little bit more?
Chair Cohen, Senator, I don't want for a moment for any member to think that we take lightly $17 million in one-time money. It's not treating our faculty fairly. It's leaving them behind other employees. It's not treating people who went beyond the call of duty of any other faculty in this state or any other employee in this state to do their part to protect the quality of our institutions and the quality of the education, the affordability that they're providing our students. It's not fair. It's wrong. I cannot say with any degree of certainty that we'd be able to close the contracts and have our faculty back in the classroom next fall when school begins with the dollars that are available to us right now.
So Mr. Chair, Chancellor, what are you saying it would take?
We are here, and you're hearing the urgency in my voice, because without the $17 million in base money going forward, I think it's going to be difficult to settle these contracts, and I'm deeply concerned about that.
Still leaves a gap. Okay, thanks.
I should also add, we still have a gap that we need to fill, because the contracts that were settled for other bargaining units exceed the dollars we talked about at the end of session. We will work to fill the remaining gap. And so we're doing our part on this. We're not just handing it over to the legislature and say, fix it. We've also done a substantial amount of reallocation, and we will probably still have to do some more reallocation to reach an agreement on these contracts. But without you as a partner in this, we cannot get it done.
Sure. You have to leave it at the bottom line. Yeah. Further questions for Senator Engelbretson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know that I have a question for the Chancellor so much as I have just an observation here. We're talking about something that could potentially be affecting our educational system here to the point of going four years without getting an increase, and Senator, you even actually brought it back four or five, six years ago when we had budget problems. We did. We were running deficits. We had those discussions quite lengthy in this very room over the last 4 years. But that's not the case now. The case now is we actually have some dollars. I mean, there's talk about putting $150 million on the bottom line or dropping it down to the reserves. Now, I'm not saying we should just grab and throw money at things, but it appears that we've got a situation here that could get even worse, and I'm very concerned about not doing the funding of the tails here. I know you're going to throw that right back at me. Go find it, Senator, and put it in an amendment, and we'll deal with it. Senator Miller, I think, said he was going to do that and look into that, and I'll work with him wherever I can, but is that the wish of the leadership of this committee to find those dollars? I mean, I don't want to pull something out of somebody else's budget if we've got that money there.
Well, Senator Engelbretson, I'm going to continue to do the same. Mr. Nauman and I have been talking, and, you know, I certainly knew in presentation of this issue that this would arguably be possibly the most contentious issue in this bill, possibly. We'll see what happens as we proceed. I'm going to continue to work on it. As I've made very clear to members of the committee, this is something that was presented to me at the end of the day Monday. You know, it's Thursday morning. And so this has all happened fairly quickly, and to be fair, that's the nature of a short session. There was also the hope at one point that we might actually finish in 2-3 weeks. You know, that's not going to happen. So there are a lot of moving pieces. I'm going to continue to work on this to see if there's anything else that can be done. But as the bill stands right now, it's difficult, absent that $34 million, to reach the tail figure. But I'm going to continue, I can assure you, to work on it over the course of the day.
Thank you.
No guarantees, but I'm going to continue to work on it. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a new member of the Finance Committee here, what is the process? What if we do not adopt these articles until I'd be inclined to wait to adopt this until we get this issue straightened out here and to learn a little bit more about this agreement or non-agreement that we have with the House, because if there's an agreement, then we would both be, the bottom line would be the same, but that's clearly not the case right now. So to Senator Bonhoff, I hate to say this, but I'm inclined to not support this article until we get this figured out here.
Two things. First of all, I probably should not have made as, and you chastised me properly, Senator Miller, and relative to my continual reference to the folks across the street. But separate from an agreement or lack thereof, in the same way that targets are established for the divisions internal to the Senate, overall targets are established internal to the Senate at a leadership level. Now, I certainly had conversations with Senator Bach about this and some of the difficulty in doing this, but so putting aside the House, what we're dealing with right now is a budget, a responsible budget number established for the next biennium. Second, procedurally, we're not going to adopt a spreadsheet till the end of this whole thing. So we would not be voting on, at least that was my intent. If members would prefer to hold off on adoption of this article, keeping in mind the adoption is for the purpose of staff more so than the substantive makeup of the bill, we can do that. If members want to hold off on a vote on this article as well, that's fine. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I certainly don't want to put staff in a difficult situation, but at the same time, I don't want to put our faculty and our students in an extremely difficult situation. And this is an important issue that that we need to get worked out. And as Senator Ingebrigtsen said, there is money. I'm not sure the agreement. This did leave division meeting the targets. I mean, I want to be very clear that when we voted this out, we met the targets that were given to Senator
But we had not Bonhoff. Established a tails target at that point.
Well, that's not Senator Bonhoff's fault or the committee's fault.
No. I just want to make sure. Now, just procedurally, and I don't know if further questions for Chancellor Rosenstone or Deputy Chancellor King. We do have somebody else who wishes to testify. I'd like to take care of testimony on this issue prior to breaking for session. If we adopt the article, the article is still in front of us for further amendment, and adopting the article will allow the staff to proceed. It doesn't change, as I mentioned, the arithmetic in terms of how you would amend the article, because the article is in front of us. So if you move an amendment to do anything, you know, with Senator Eakin's study, for instance, it would take a majority vote to remove it from the proposal. The same would be true if the article is then placed in the bill. It would take the same majority vote. So I'm not sure it changes anything in terms of procedure. So just think about that for a minute. There's been a request for testimony from, Ms. Kaplan was saying something to me. There's been a request for testimony from somebody who hasn't had a chance to testify in front of this committee, Commissioner Pogemiller.
Chair Cohn, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chancellor. Thank you, Ms. King. So, Commissioner Pogemiller, when was the last time you testified in front of this committee?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not quite sure.
So, welcome
thank
to
you.
The committee.
And I know you're under time pressure, Mr. Chairman and committee members. As you know, the governor views this session as an unsession and so was not looking to increase appropriations in a lot of areas. He did look very closely at the issue you are talking about right now, and he did choose as a very important area this $17 million one-time permanent base increase for MNSCU. And out of all the things he turned down, which were many, and you are doing items in other bills that are over and above the governor's expenditures, this is one that I think I thought it was necessary to point out that he was convinced during the interim that for the good of the quality of education in the MNSCU system, this was important to make a basic adjustment to retain high-quality faculty. and it would be detrimental to the quality of the institutions if you did not do this. So I just leave it at that. I hope you find a way to make it a permanent number, and I think the governor would be pleased if you could.
And Commissioner Pogolmo, if I can ask this, I don't want to get into the internal discussions within the governor's office, but I don't serve on the division any longer. I was certainly not on the conference committee. As this was taking place last year, was there any sense on the part of the governor that this might be a problem in the future? And if so, did he attempt to address that with the conferees?
Mr. Chairman, I think replaying that is, I don't know. And I think it would be fair to say that in the examination of a non-budget year, the governor chose this as a priority for expenditure. And I think I think it's best to leave it at that. And as you know, he did not choose very many areas to add additional base money in. This was one of the few, and not even in K-12. So I think, you know, and as you all know how committed the governor is to K-12, the fact that he chose this as an area, I think, should be indicative of his sense of this issue.
Okay. Thank you very much. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, just briefly, I guess I have to agree with the testimony that as we move forward and if targets are reevaluated in the future, I think this needs to be a top priority. I think this is a really, really important issue that it be funded in the base.
I don't disagree, and I've pointed it out. Thank you, Commissioner Pogolmo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, members, we're at noon. I don't know if we have any further discussion about this particular issue. So relative, and is there further discussion on the article? Sir Ingebrigtsen?
Thank you. And just real quickly, Mr. Chair, you talked about the article possibly being put aside, not adopted, or adopted, obviously.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, I apologize for interrupting you. If there's further discussion on the article generally or amendments or anything of that sort, we'll continue that after session. If we're done with the discussion of the article separate from this issue, then if you want to discuss then procedurally how you want to handle things.
When are we going to vote on the bill? On the article, I'm sorry.
Right now. Well, if we're done with the discussion on the article, we would arguably vote potentially now, but not if we're not done with the discussion. Sir Fishback?
Mr. Chair, I thought you said we had not accepted the amendment. We haven't voted on the amendment.
No, we haven't.
So then we would have to have the amendment reflect this before we vote on the article.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, that you were kind of missing that, I think. But that's
so, I'm sorry, Senator Fishback. So
I haven't seen it.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, I wondered if we were in a position procedurally to proceed, but if not, we'll simply take up this article when we come back. Sounds like that's kind of a preference, Senator Fishback, is that?
Mr. Chair, that's fine. I know that a couple of people have left now.
All right. Okay, so why don't we recess at this point. We'll pick up things with this article afterwards. Members, if you want to keep everything at the table, you can do so to other folks. Take what you have. We'll lock the doors, but I think the sergeants would probably be collecting anything that doesn't belong to a member at the table. So if members want to, Senator Fishback?
Before we finish, I was just going to ask again, Mr. Chair, if there was any way that we could possibly get a hold of just will be just the amendments that are offered to reflect
the changes.
The changes.
Correct.
Because that would be helpful, I think, in all of our discussion and decisions in the afternoon.
Yeah, and I agree. I won't make that guarantee because it's I'll have to talk to Mr. Bottom, but I'll try to facilitate that during the first part of session.
And, Mr. Chair, whatever available is would be helpful. But I think that to give, given that this was all that happened this morning, it would be helpful for the next.
That's what I'm going to try to do during session. I think we'll be there for a while. So, all right. So let's recess again. Members can keep everything at the table, and we'll come back, roughly a half hour, 45 minutes after session, if people want to catch something to eat, assuming session is closer to the end of the afternoon.